polished up. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Abe Amoros from the LIUNA Union, Laborers International. I'm going to be here talking about the election here in Pennsylvania, the Marcellus Shale, what's coming up on Tuesday, and what LIUNA hopes will come out of the election. Also, State Representative Eugene DePasquale from York County will be here talking about, of course, the shale, the election, and so much more. And also our good friend Erwin Aronson going to be talking a little bit about the there's some talk of the Republicans being out in force challenging anyone who doesn't look like them, angry and white, and what the legal profession is doing to maybe help a little bit of that. Talk a little bit about voter registration and a little bit about foreclosure law. Some interesting things. Yeah, before we get started, I gotta get this off my chest. This thing with this idiot in Kentucky. If this were a Democrat who threw some conservative woman to the ground and stepped on her head, the Republicans would be firing up old Sparky as we speak. But as we speak, no Republicans have been arrested. There are no arrests. They're talking about arresting someone. Maybe if we can think about it, if we can find a time. You know, after all, she was asking for it. You know, she was a professional. She's one of them there peoples. Professional. She got paid to go out there and do that. Amazing, amazing stuff. But we're going to talk about that as well, because there's just so much to it. And, wow, just amazing, amazing stuff. We're going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thomas Friedman had a really great piece today that I wanted to go through a little bit here, because I think it's so important. Thomas Friedman, the free trade advocate, I'd say more libertarian than conservative, but very, very much, in my opinion, a Republican. He says, I confess, I find it dispiriting to read the polls and see candidates, mostly Republicans, leading the various midterm races while promoting many of the same ideas that got us into this mess. And it's what we've been saying on this program all along. They're not offering anything new. They have no new ideas. They have no vision. All they're saying is, hey, we're not the black guy. And that's their platform. So Friedman writes, am I hearing this right? Let's have more tax cuts unlinked to any specific spending cuts. And while we're still fighting two wars, because that worked so well during the Bush years, to make our economy strong and our deficit small. Kind of got a point. He says, let's immediately cut government spending instead of phasing cuts in gradually while we're still marred in recession, because that worked so well during the Great Depression. Got a point. Let's roll back financial regulation, because we've learned from experience that Wall Street can police itself and average Americans will never have to bail it out? Got a point. Let's have no limits on corporate campaign spending so oil and coal companies can more easily and anonymously strip the Environmental Protection Agency of its power to limit pollution in the air that our kids breathe. Again, he's got a point. Let's discriminate against gays and lesbians who want to join the military and fight for their country. Again, he says, am I hearing this right? Let's restrict immigration because, after all, we don't live in a world where America's the most important competitive advantage is our ability to attract the world's best brains. Again, he's got a point, because what we're seeing is we're actually seeing a reverse brain drain. We're losing the smart people. We're seeing smart people actually going to China right now, because there's a lot of money to be made there because the Chinese government is kicking in. He says, am I hearing this right? Let's repeal our limited health care reform rather than see what works and then fix it. And he says, let's oppose a free trade system that made us rich. I'd like to tinker with that. He says, let's pay for more tax cuts by uncovering waste that I can't identify, fraud that I haven't found, and abuse that I'll get back to you later on. And that's what we've heard from the Republicans. There's waste, fraud, and abuse out there. You go, well, where? Well, it's there. No specifics, no, it's a whole bunch of just trust me. Yeah, now I kind of understand, you know, what women feel like. Trust me. I'm kind of getting that feeling right now with the Republican Party. He says all that's missing is any realistic diagnosis of where we are as a country and what we need to get back to sustainable growth. Actually, he says, such a diagnosis has been done. A nonpartisan group of America's most distinguished engineers, scientists, educators, and industrialists unveiled just such a study in the midst of this campaign. Here's the story, he writes. In 2005, our national academies responded to a call from a bipartisan group of senators to recommend 10 actions the federal government could take to enhance science and technology. So basically, we in this country, we could compete with everybody around the world. And they came up with this study, and they came down the list. These are the things we have to do, of which we haven't done. In fact, Charles M. Vest, the former MIT president, he writes, worked on the study and noted in a speech recently that Gathering Storm, which was the name of the paper, worked by the Councils of Competitiveness led to the America Competes Act of 2007. That included funding for basic science research and other things. He said other recommendations were improving K-12 science education. Now, look, here in Harrisburg, they're talking about doing away with kindergarten. We don't need that. Get away with it. Don't need it at all. He goes on to write, so on September 23rd, the same group released a follow-up report. Rising above the gathering storm revisited, rapidly approaching Category 5. The subtitle, Rapidly Approaching Category 5, says it all. The committee's conclusion is that in spite of the efforts of both the government and private sector, the outlook for America is to compete for quality jobs is in big trouble. And he goes down this list. He says, but I thought we were number one. Here's a little dose of reality where we rank today. Sixth in global innovation based on competition, but 40th in the rate of change over the last decade. We're 11th among industrialized nations in the fraction of 25 to 34-year-olds who have graduated from high school. So our education system's falling behind. We're 16th in college completion rating, 22nd in broadband internet access, 24th in life expectancy at birth, 27th among developed nations in proportion of college students receiving degrees in science and engineering, 48th in K-12 math and science education, 29th in the number of people who per 100 have cell phones. Not a pretty picture, they say. Not a pretty picture at all. And what he finishes up with, I think, is interesting. He says, you know, the goal is to make America the premier place to innovate, to invest, to create high-paying jobs. He says, you'll have to Google it, though. He's talking about this report. The report has received 1/100th of the attention given to Juan Williams' remarks about Muslims. And he finishes off with the most powerful line. A dysfunctional political system is one that knows the right answers but can't even discuss them rationally, let alone act on them. And one that devotes vastly more attention to cable TV preachers than to recommendations by its scientists and its engineers. And, you know, I really don't often talk about Friedman's articles because I don't often agree with them. But this one, I have to be honest, spot on. You know, we keep telling ourselves, we keep pumping ourselves up that, you know, we're number one. And we hear that from the right all the time. We're exceptional. We have American exceptionalism. Yeah, because smart people before us did smart things. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, you know, I truly believe my children are going to be part of the greatest generation. And if you've ever read this book, it's called The Fourth Turning, and it talks about how the different generations move through. So we're going to need a next greatest generation. And that's going to be the generation that saves this country after we've screwed it up. Much like, you know, the World War II generation, the people who cleaned up the mess and made the country better for their children. And, you know, we were talking about this, and I said, you know, all we can do right now is throw slogans at each other. All we can do right now is argue. And you look at these idiots in Kentucky throwing a woman to the ground and stomping her because she has a sign in her hands. What does that say about us? This guy, I gotta be 6'3", a big guy, saying, well, you know, I had to protect Rand. No, Rand's got paid security people. Let them deal with it, Twizzler. So I just had to grab her. Had to grab her, throw her to the ground, stomp on her. That's how we deal with our problems, I guess, in Republican land, which is what frightens me on Tuesday. I'm really not sure how this is going to go. If things don't turn out the way the media has already told people it's going to, what happens? I mean, if they're willing to throw someone on the ground and stomp on her head because their candidate is winning, what will they do if he loses? I mean, that's really the question that I have. And it's a scary one. Because we're in uncharted waters as far as my experience goes. We're moving towards the deep end. Anyway. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you want to engage in a conversation on this, what are your thoughts? Do you think this guy did the right thing? Because I don't. You know, I just don't know how you can lay your hands on somebody and not end up in jail. I'm just mind-boggling. Just absolutely, absolutely mind-boggling. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're right back with Abe Amoros from the Laborers International Union. Stick around. We're right back after this.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Welcome to the Building Trades Solidarity Rally in Times Square.
New York Building and Construction Trades President Gary LaBarbera. Thousands of building trades workers rallied with former Polish president and labor legend Lech Wałęsa to protest non-union builders.
They exploit workers every day. I can tell you something, brothers and sisters. Today we draw a line in the sand, because I don't know about you, I've had enough.
Through an interpreter, Lech Wałęsa urged American workers to rely on solidarity to deal with all the problems confronting us.
We used solidarity to dismantle the communist system, to bring it down. Now let us stay in solidarity in order to resolve our problems and challenges.
The UAW says members at General Dynamics have overwhelmingly approved a new contract covering 1,500 workers and 3,000 retirees. The union says the contract includes pay raises, pension improvements, and adjustable work hours. The UAW says the contract also includes stronger job security language. The new contract covers workers at plants in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. General Dynamics builds military equipment, including the Abrams battle tank and the Stryker infantry vehicle. The big three U.S. automakers are looking at reinvesting in the state that gave birth to the auto industry. Jesse Russell reports.
GM, Ford, and Chrysler would invest as much as $2 billion into Michigan thanks to tax breaks from the state. The Michigan Economic Growth Authority said on Tuesday that the $2.1 billion in tax breaks will provide the auto companies with incentives to invest in 17 projects in the state. Chrysler's credit is the most substantial. It's for 20 years and is worth $1.3 billion. The early plans for the credit include plant upgrades and adding new shifts at currently operating plants. Ford's credit is for $909 million for 15 years. That'll go toward providing new employment opportunities for auto workers and opening or reopening plants. And GM had already received a tax credit for developing a hybrid battery plant in the state. But on Tuesday, it was announced the credit will be expanded with an additional $25 million. That credit will likely see the addition of 4,000 employees in the Detroit region.
Studies suggest 15 to 25% of all construction workers in New York State are misclassified as independent contractors. The new Fair Play Act that became law Tuesday will punish this misclassification with fines and criminal penalties. Delaware enacted similar legislation in 2009, and Pennsylvania passed legislation this month. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, and from the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Shipbuilders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stupid, get it started, get it started.
I gotta wonder. I'm gonna wonder out loud here. When Sarah Palin was handing out endorsements, she was endorsing our Republican senatorial candidate Pat Toomey. When she was handing out that endorsement, why didn't she endorse Tom Corbett? I mean, he is one of her drill baby drill guys. After all, you know, not in favor of taxing the Marcellus Shale. Pretty much saying, you know, go ahead, go do what you got to do. We don't need anything from you. Go ahead. Well, we do, maybe some campaign contributions, maybe a couple bucks to put in my pocket, but nothing for the citizens of the state of Pennsylvania. Never mind that. Kind of makes you wonder why that didn't happen. We're going to look into that. I've got Abe Amoros on the line. He's with the Pennsylvania Laborers International Union. Abe, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
I appreciate you taking time for me. You know, I'm thinking about this. I wonder why Mama Grizzly there didn't give Tom Corbett the thumbs up.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, she's been all around the country endorsing Tea Party candidates and those on the fringe and those that are not in mainstream America. And, of course, you hit the nail right on the head with Tom Corbett getting all that those campaign contributions and then being against any taxing of Marcellus Shale. Last calculation I saw, it was over $700,000. But, you know, Sarah Palin's out there being a good soldier for the cause and backing all these extreme right-wing candidates. And she's been strangely silent on the Corbett race, which is fun with us, seeing that Honorado has gained some momentum. I mean, I was in Philadelphia on Saturday, and they're pretty optimistic that they're going to carry it big. And he needs to win Philadelphia and the suburbs big. And, of course, hold his own within the T and do well out west. So, I mean, this has really gone down to the wire. And same with the Toomey-Sestak race. I mean, the statistical dead heat. And there's some polls out there that are showing discrepancies. But, you know, the only poll that really matters, Rick, is the one on Tuesday, man. Everything else is just talk right now.
And that's why everybody has to get out and vote. I don't care what side of this you're on. What angers me is in the midterm election, you've got less than 20% of the people in this country deciding. I've even seen numbers as low as 11% of the country deciding who's going to be representing them.
That's right. That's absolutely reprehensible, because very bad things happen when few people come out to the polls. And I got to tell you, Rick, I'm afraid that this state might be on track to become a right-to-work state, that a Republican majority in the state House of Representatives, if that happens, and I'm hoping that doesn't happen, may start to fool around with prevailing wage. I mean, that is going to threaten the way of life for our union households. I mean, that's something that just cannot happen. It cannot happen. So I'm exhorting the listening, your listeners, to make sure that you come out and vote. Make sure that you talk to family members, friends, people that you work with, people that you go to church with, and make sure that you come out to vote. I mean, the polls are open for 13 hours on Tuesday. You can't tell me you can't carve out 15 to 20 minutes to get to the polls and back, because this election is so key. And like you said, I mean, very few people participate in midterm elections, and this is the right time to be doing this. I mean, this, we have to get our base motivated and realize that this is one heck of an important election.
I absolutely agree. And to me, the biggest issue, and you may disagree, I've had some people disagree with me, but to me, the biggest issue right now is one that the Senate Republicans dropped in our lap. It's the fact that they made the promise that they were going to put an extraction tax on natural gas. They have not done that. I don't believe they're going to get it done. So what this means to me is the next governor is going to be the guy who is either going to put a sane, rational extraction tax on the resource that is sucked out of our ground, or he's not. And to me, that's really the big issue.
I agree with you, Rick. I mean, I don't know who's disagreeing with you, but I'm agreeing with you on this, because that is such a huge economic boon to the state. I mean, we're talking about an industry that's going to be cultivated over the next 30 years that's going to create thousands of jobs, and you can't tell me that those drillers out there, those companies, are not going to stick around and enjoy that economic boon. And why can't the state, which is in such dire straits right now, benefit from that revenue also? Whoever wins on Tuesday is going to be faced with a $5 billion hole in 2011. $5 billion. So we have to take advantage of these revenue generating opportunities. And it's not going to cost these drillers that much. I think that what the governor had proposed was very reasonable. And for the state Senate to dangle this out there as something they were going to take up and then run away, I think is very cowardly.
Well, here's the thing. And the reality is every one of the drillers have already got the tax in their business plan. We're already paying the tax. The difference is they're sticking it in their pocket.
Exactly. So it's more profit for them. Again, it's reprehensible, and the state Senate, the Republican-controlled state Senate, should be ashamed.
Absolutely. And to me, this comes down to jobs.
Right.
You know, I have yet to hear Tom Corbett say he's going to fight for Pennsylvania workers on this. I've yet to hear him say anything about any Pennsylvania worker getting a job. All he's saying, there's going to be jobs there. They may be, you know, slaves coming in from the deep south there. It could be some transients coming through who take the jobs, but maybe not you or I.
That's exactly right. In fact, when you ask Tom Corbett anything in detail, he tells you, oh, we'll talk about that after the election. We'll strategize after the election. Are you kidding me? I mean, this is the Republican candidate for governor not wanting to answer fundamental questions, and he's been strangely silent about jobs, especially after he put his foot in his mouth and called individuals that are receiving unemployment benefits lazy. And again, I don't know of anybody that likes being on unemployment. I know plenty of people that want to be out there working hard, overtime if necessary, to take care of their families with a good-paying job, a family-sustaining wage, and health care benefits. Again, this is a guy that is so out of touch with reality that it will not surprise me when he goes down on Tuesday, because, I mean, he's even alienated his own base. I mean, Tom Corbett is as empty a suit as they come.
And I gotta tell you, it scares me to think what happens if he gets in.
Because yes,
he's taken that bizarre, you know, what may have started off as a hoax, you know, just a political trick, is going to turn around and harm this state by him taking that nonsensical anti-tax pledge.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, the man just is not dealing with reality. He's just not dealing with reality. And, of course, none of the listeners want to hear that we're going to be taxing more. But the bottom line is we are in dire straits, and we have to come up with something that is sensible. For him to take a no-tax pledge is not only ridiculous, it's nonsensical, it's not logical, and he's not fooling anybody. I think that's the thing that insults everybody the most, Rick, is he's not fooling anybody.
Nope.
Even the most stringent hardliners in his camp, they don't believe him either. It's just a soundbite for the sake of getting votes, but he deep down does not believe that himself.
Well, I mean, because they know it can't happen. And
right.
If it does, shame on the people at the bottom, because there will be deep, wide, and painful cuts.
Absolutely.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm here with Abe Amoros. He's Pennsylvania Legislative Director for LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America. LIUNA.org is their website. Abe, you know, I was watching the debates between Pat Toomey and Joe Sestak, and I learned something about Pat Toomey that I did not know. I did not know that his father was a union member for years. And what's kind of gotten me, and I want to get your opinion on this, but what's kind of got me is here is the son of a union member, somebody who reaped the benefits of a decent wage, of health care, and you know, security for his parent in old age. Yet one of the guys who's one of the most anti-union guys to walk this planet.
Right.
How does that come together?
You know, I have a hard time wrapping my brain around that one. The man is who he is because his father was able to provide for his family, was able to educate that young man growing up, and for him to turn around and make working class people the enemy, call us all kinds of names, call us greedy, stereotype us, throw us under the bus at every opportunity, it's just something that is not just reprehensible, but makes him look like a complete idiot. And, of course, he doesn't talk about those union roots because he attacks us at every opportunity he gets. And Pat Toomey is another out-of-touch hardliner who is just a scary guy, Rick. I mean, this guy is two steps to the right of Rick Santorum, who was just one of the scariest individuals as far as working families were concerned when he was in the Senate. And this guy is two steps to the right and even scarier. And for him to walk around and pontificate against working families, against our issues, and to promote that horrendous Club for Growth, I think is just an abomination. We can't possibly vote for that guy on Tuesday.
I think the very interesting story that has not been at all reported anywhere is the fact that Rick Santorum, who for all intent and purposes is the face of the conservative movement here in Pennsylvania, is doing nothing to help him. In fact, he's doing more than nothing. He's in Iowa campaigning for some bizarre cause.
That's
he's completely
right.
Left the state.
That is telling, isn't it? That's absolutely telling.
Yeah, I got this clip of Pat Toomey during the debate. I got to play for our listeners because I think it's important.
You know, I mentioned my dad as a union worker. There were times when I was a kid when the union called a strike. And when the union called a strike, my dad was out of work. Those were times of enormous anxiety in the family, and especially for my dad. But my dad knew that eventually the strike would be over, and he'd be able to get back to work because he had a job to go back to.
And did you hear how he kind of put it, the union called a strike? Kind of divorcing his father from the whole membership thing.
Exactly. And what he didn't talk about was when that union was successful with a collective bargaining agreement, the family was better off as a result of it. That's what he won't talk about. Again, demonizing unions, demonizing working people, and what is wrong with having decent wages, a decent pension to fall back upon, and decent health care? I am so tired of these clowns attacking us for fighting for what's right and what's basic and, most of all, what's fair. I mean, it's just unbelievable, and we have to fight back. We can't sit back and allow these guys to dictate who we are.
That's right.
Because in that clip, Pat Toomey made it clear that the union was the enemy.
Yep. And what he was able to do is what the conservatives always do, divorce themselves from the union, divorce themselves from their government, divorce themselves from us,
right.
Society.
That's right.
But, you know, and I think you're right. You've got to stand up and you've got to fight. I heard this really interesting ad this week, and I know you're of the Latino community.
Yes.
So I want to know, have you ever heard of a group called Latinos for Reform?
You know, I've heard of them, but I can't say that I'm really familiar with them.
Okay, well, you know, you're going to have a real treat here. This is Latinos for Reform. This is their political ad because they're angry and they want you to do something. Here's the ad.
It's an election year, so here come more promises about immigration reform. Last time, President Obama and the Democratic leadership made a commitment that immigration reform would be passed within a year. But 2 years have gone by and nothing, not even a vote in Congress. With a Democratic president and supermajorities in both chambers of Congress, they have no excuses. Clearly, the Democratic leadership betrayed us. And now, when they need our votes, they are at it again with more empty promises. Aren't you tired of politicians playing games with your future? Do you really think it will be different this time? They had 2 years to do something. It was all talk and no action. This November, we need to send a message to all politicians. If they didn't keep their promise on immigration reform, then they can't count on our vote. Democratic leaders must pay for their broken promises and betrayals. If we just go on supporting them in November, they will keep playing games with our future and taking our vote for granted. Don't vote this November. This is the only way to send them a clear message. You can no longer take us for granted.
Wow. You know, I know where this is coming from now, Rick. You just jog my memory. These are the Yahoos based out of Nevada. They're basically taking up Sharon Angle's cause against Harry Reid. That's where this originated from. To me, as a Latino, I am offended. I find there are racial overtones here, and I think it's irresponsible for anyone to recommend that people stay home and not vote. That's the bottom line. I think that it is a joke that they put this together. I think it's going to backfire. In fact, while I was listening to one of the news stations on the way out of Philadelphia earlier this week where this was talked about, and some of the Latino activists have said in Nevada that the ad has actually backfired because it has stimulated people and has gotten them to think, well, gee, you know, we really need to step up our efforts now and really participate in this election on Tuesday, because that is just horse manure.
Well,
that ad was horse manure, and
absolutely,
the organization is horse manure. And to insist or to even suggest that a group should stay home because they disagree with either party, for that matter, is ridiculous. If you're going to change things, you have to participate in the process. You have to be more vocal. Sure, hold elected officials accountable. Do that. But you don't stay home out of spite. That's ridiculous, and it's meant to suppress the vote. It's not just intimidating, but it's also racist.
Well, I got to tell you, the most glaring thing is that they're not saying, hey, come to the Republican side, because they know there's nothing there for them.
Exactly.
They know they're not even going to try and make that argument.
Right.
Because they know the Republicans are not the place for the Latino community. That's a foregone conclusion.
Right.
So all they can hope is stay home.
That's right. That's right. And it's wrong.
Absolutely wrong. But I just wanted to get your reaction because
I've
been playing this because it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it is fun. Yeah, it's more tragic than anything else, Rick, because, you know, what you're doing is you're taking advantage of people. And you're insulting, first of all, you're insulting people's intelligence, but then what you're trying to do is take advantage of the situation for your own candidates. Again, that was created to help Sharon Angle out against Harry Reid in Nevada, and it's just not going to work. It had the opposite effect. It had the opposite effect, and now people are really ginned up. They're really kicked off. And I believe that the ad, Rick, has been taken off of many of the airwaves in Nevada, and you're not hearing it as much now.
In fact, Univision refused to run it. They were going to take $80,000 worth of ads. The group Latinos Reformer, actually from Virginia, they're basically a 527, much the same people, the same P.O. box as the Swift Boat people.
There you have it.
So there you go. but the problem is you are like this little girl says.
You lie. You hate America.
it just makes you kind of shake your head. I got to take a break here, Abe. Always great talking to you, and I hope to have you back again real soon.
Absolutely, Rick, and I want to thank you for having me on once again. I enjoy your show immensely.
You are welcome here anytime. Abe Amoros, legislative director here in Pennsylvania for LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. Stick around.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party, Pledge to America, says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up. And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. And the teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know,
together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
Crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation. Wasting time.
1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, you can email me at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Remember, check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. The stomp thing, the whole stomper gate, if you will. The news has just been inundating us with this because I think it's a big story. I think the fact of the matter is you've got these goons, these Rithuglicans, who absolutely think that it's their time, it's their entitlement, and they're going to stomp anybody who gets in their way. Because after all, they're taking our country back, right back to the 19th century. Because it was better back then, when we didn't have to think for ourselves. And we could just be told what to do. And what's interesting to me is ABC News is reporting that nobody's been arrested. They're considering charges against at least two of the Rand Paul supporters who were caught on tape. You know, the guy who stepped on her head and maybe the guy who threw her to the ground. Mr. I'm in favor of open carry. You know, those are the kind of people you want walking around with guns. People who are very even-tempered, the even-tempered kind of people who throw small women to the ground and have someone else step on their head. That's usually a pretty good one. But what I've loved about this whole thing is even in an apology, it's a backhanded apology.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but it wasn't as bad as it looked. Yeah, you know, when I took my 290 pounds and stepped on her head, that wasn't anything. It looked worse than it did. I think she should have to apologize to me. I got blood on my shoe.
Yeah, that's kind of the position he's taken. You know, and I love this mentality that I stepped on her head because I've got some kind of bizarre back problem, and I couldn't join in on holding her down. I mean, think about that. Think of the logic that goes into a statement like that. Think of how twisted your mind has to work to think that it's okay to take this small girl, because she was a small girl, throw her to the ground and stomp on her head. And then what I love even more is the rationale. Well, she's paid. She's a paid protester. She's a professional. Man, is this what we've come to? I sure hope not. I sure hope that the people in Kentucky, I sure hope that those people look at this situation and go, you know what? These are not the kind of people we want in power. And you look at the fact that Rand Paul was given something like $2,600 by this guy and his wife, by Mr. Stomper and his wife, and has refused to give it back. Me, I would have said, well, I have to disassociate myself with this guy as fast as possible. And this is, you know, this is part of what happens when you have this kind of rhetoric, this type of heat around these elections. But I'm telling you, I hope they lock these guys up, because I'll tell you, if it were Democrats who threw some conservative woman to the ground, you know, if Ann Coulter were in front of a group of MoveOn people and they threw her to the ground, they'd be firing up old Sparky. They'd be electrocuting people left and right. But I love the fact that this guy, he wants her to apologize. It's her fault that she was there.
So you shouldn't have been there.
I love that logic. And so I was thinking about this on the way home today. I was going, that guy that walked in front of my car, if I ran him over, maybe because he wasn't in the crosswalk, and if I, deliberately ran him over, could I then ask for an apology? You need to apologize for denting my car. Do you think it would work? Or do you think I'd get arrested? Which is why I question why these two are not in jail. But the sad part of this is that I do believe this is going to get Rand Paul some more votes. Because this is where I think some activists may lose points. Because they don't know where their audience is. So this girl walks up with her sign and she wants to get a photo next to, dim-witted puddle brain flag monkey holding a Republic Corps sign next to stupid. And she doesn't think that the mindless minions are going to react. Come on. You got to know your surroundings. And then you got to know how it's going to play in the media. And I can guarantee you down in Kentucky, it's playing that, well, those MoveOn people done sent their paid people down there to stir up trouble, which is why we need Randy. We need Randy in there. And I just think it was a dumb move, but look, I don't think you should be able to throw people to the ground. I just don't see it at all. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Look out, they're angry, foaming at the mouth angry, and they're lashing out, saying they won't take it anymore. As one of their leaders angrily cried, it's a war. Indeed, they're on the move to take their country back. Forget the Tea Party, rowdies. This is the Champagne Party. More precisely, it's the Dom Perignon $1,000-a-bottle champagne party, propelled by, get this, billionaire's rage. Yes, some of the richest, most pampered people on the planet, people who literally wallow in luxury every day, with never a concern about losing a job, a home, health care, or getting their kids into college, these people are wailing in self-pity. They are Wall Street hedge fund operators, which essentially means they are high-flying financial flim-flammers. What has stoked them into an elitist fury is an Obama proposal to close off a ridiculous tax loophole that has let them pay only 15% of their lavish income in taxes rather than the 35% rate that us commoners pay. One of the richest of the ragers, Stephen Schwarzman of the Blackstone Group, sees Obama's proposal as an outrageous intrusion into the suites of the elite, comparing it to, quote, when Hitler invaded Poland. This over-the-top tantrum from a multi-billionaire, a guy who spent $3 million in 2007 to throw himself a birthday party. Come on, Steve, pay your taxes. Pathetically, the real root of this sad, sad hedge fund rebellion is a feeling by these powerful, super-privileged megalomaniacs that they are being picked on. One even whined that asking hedge funders to pay taxes at the same rate as everyone else amounts to, quote, the persecution of the minority. This is Jim Hightower saying, good grief, man, get a grip. Next thing you know, they'll hire Glenn Beck to host a weepy telethon to save the billionaire's tax loophole.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
The Blue Blood, see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the New York Ages. Now home run and hit my teeth on the New York Ages. And the world might end tonight.
You know, I gotta tell you, a very appropriate song, The New Dark Ages. This AP story, just one of those things that just rattles around in your brain, and it's one of those things you've always talked about, because we have talked about it on this program for the longest time, how short the messages have gotten. There used to be actual paragraphs that you would read to get an idea. Now it's down to death tags, which I think is brilliant messaging. You got to give Luntz credit. It's masterful linguistics. But the AP reports today, TV commercials shrink to match attention spans. He says, and now a word from our sponsors, a very brief word. TV commercials are shrinking along with attention spans and advertising budgets. The 15-second ad is increasingly common, gradually supplanting the 30-second ad just as it did to the one-minute ad a decade ago. For viewers, they write, it means more commercials in a more rapid-fire format. So basically what you're going to see is short attention span theater. It's going to be just flashing images constantly. And your brain maybe picks it up, maybe it doesn't. To me, scary stuff. Jonathan Greening, associate professor at Northwestern University of Journalism School, he said, it used to be that the most valuable thing on the planet was time. Now, he says, the most valuable thing on the planet is attention. And, yeah, I mean, my daughter comes home from school at night going, you know, the class is just, you know, the kids are all over the place. The teacher spends most of her time trying to wrangle them. And I remember this movie. It was really just probably the dumbest movie I've ever seen. It was called Idiocracy, where this guy, I guess, flies into the future and everybody's stupid. Completely, they've completely devolved. And
they're watering their crops with Mountain Dew or something like that, and all the crops are dying, and the people are about ready to starve to death, and all the water is or fruit punch or who knows, some sugary crap drink like that, and this guy, you know, saves the planet by doing things we take for granted today because the future, completely mindless. No attention span, no thought process. And while it's a joke movie, you got to start wondering. The article says the number of 15-second television commercials has jumped by more than 70% in 5 years to nearly 5.5 million last year, according to Nielsen. They made up 34% of all national ads on the air last year, up from 29% in 2004. Deborah Mitchell, executive director of the Center for Brand and Project Management at the University of Wisconsin, said commercial skipping, digital video recorders, and distractions such as laptops and cell phones have shortened viewers' attention spans. Viewers are watching television stream sites like Hulu, where advertisers have less of a presence. So companies figure, why spend money on longer ads anyway? Plus, if they get into a, you know, if they skip our ad, well, so what? At least they saw something really short. These 15-second ads, of course, are per second the exact same price, but, you know, they're half as cheap as the 30 ones. And what I think is interesting is you talk to people. I mean, you talk to anybody, and they can tell you the slogan. They can give you the death tax. And they can, you know, well, I don't want to pay taxes when I die. But that's as deep as the understanding into what the estate tax actually is. And you look at this constant repetition, this constant beating of the message into our heads. You know, it reminds me of Catholic school. Only instead of constant visual images, back then it was the ruler and the pointer who beat math problems into us. 6 6 is 12. 6 plus 6 is 12. But we're not getting that. We're getting buy Cheerios. We're getting buy this, buy that. You need this. You need that. It's flash, flash, flash. And we wonder why our kids need Ritalin. We wonder why they can't sit still. We wonder why they can't pay attention. It's this constant sloganing. It's this constant mini-messaging, mini-marketing. And you look at this woman in Kentucky. She's a professional protester. She's asking for it. That's the message. I had a conversation this evening. I took my son to soccer practice, and it's at a church, in a church lot in the field in back of their church, and they were preparing for their Halloween kind of thing, which was kind of weird that a church is doing a Halloween thing, because well, that's a topic for another day. But she was dressed up as some kind of an anti-abortion thing. And I'm not quite sure what it was. I don't know if she was billboard or if she was an aborted fetus. I don't know. It kind of just looked crazy to me. But we started talking about abortion. She was 18, maybe 17, 18. And I said, well, you know, what's with that? She goes, we want to ban abortions. I said, okay, well, then what? Then all the babies will be alive. I said, okay. So you want to lock people up for having abortions? Well, I didn't say that. Well, that's what you'd have to do. No. So we had this whole long conversation about how banning something meant that in order to ban it, you had to lock people up for doing it. And she had never thought of that. It had never gone to that level. It had never gone to the, well, what's next? It's simple geometry. I remember in geometry class, you learned the if-then postulates. And in a lot of people's worlds, things are as simple as if-then. If we ban abortions, then more babies will be born. That's as far as the thought process goes. That's it. There's no more, you know, no more brain cells firing than that. That's it. It's as deep as their thought processes go. And that scares me. It scares me when you advocate for something, but you have no idea what the outcome of that position is going to be. And as I talked to this girl, it was obvious she had no idea, other than the slogan, what she was talking about. And I said, well, why don't we, instead of saying it's illegal to have abortions, because I've got two daughters, I don't want them to have that. You know, my Catholic upbringing, You know, I'm not thrilled with it. Why don't we do something to prevent it in the first place? We're a smart society. We're educated people. We should be able to figure out how to, well, you know, protect yourself. And if not, maybe the plan B. She'd never heard of plan B, which is another scary thing. I thought for sure she was going to tell me she didn't know what a condom was. But, you know, that whole discussion didn't come up because I didn't want to get that deep into it. It was just kind of you're wearing pictures of just really disgusting things. Exactly what? I mean, think about that. I mean, I got to be honest. You know, there's some things that I advocate for. I don't know that I'd walk around with pictures of stuff on me like that without having a full understanding of what that meant. And it takes me back to this bumper sticker mentality. We're given a couple of words, and that's the depth of our information. Anti-tax pledge. Well, what exactly does that mean? What does it mean that you're not going to raise taxes on the state level? Well, what it means, obviously, that local taxes are going to have to be raised, or you're going to have massive cuts, deep, painful, wide cuts. People are going to suffer. That's what it means. But we hear Tom Corbett took an anti-tax pledge. Woo! We're not going to have to pay any more taxes. Really? Did you think that went through? Because your local government gets money from the state. Your schools get money from the state. If there's no money for them to give to the state to give to the local districts, what do you think happens? The local people raise taxes. So Tom Corbett's not going to raise taxes? No. Not going to do it. He's going to make your local guy do it. Your property taxes are going to go up. And you're going to complain about, oh, those guys down at City Hall, they're all a bunch of crooks and thieves and no good for nothings. When it was your vote for Corbett, that did it. But you don't think that far. You don't get that in depth. But, you know, it's one of those things that just kind of makes you laugh. And it kind of makes you wonder what path we're taking. Education, to me, is the key. Critical thinking, to me, is the key. If we don't fund Head Start programs, if we don't fund kindergarten programs, if we don't have small, manageable class sizes, we're going to have real problems. You know, and I've been talking about the game of chess for a while. One of the things that I credit with helping me think things through, learning how to, as a small child, learning how to think ahead, learning how to plan ahead. And, you know, with my children, I'll teach them to play as well. But it's that strategic thinking. It's looking forward. Learning from the mistakes you've made, moving forward, seeing into the future. And, you drive up and down our roads. Failure of vision. We are gridlocked. And we're landlocked. The failure of vision. Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're right back with State Representative Eugene DePasquale. 1-888-520-RICK. Remember, check out TheRickSmithShow.com. We're right back after this.
I see their blue.
It is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Welcome to the Building Trade Solidarity Rally in Times Square.
New York Building and Construction Trades President Gary LaBarbera. Thousands of building trades workers rallied with former Polish president and labor legend Lech Wałęsa to protest non-union builders.
They exploit workers every day. I can tell you something, brothers and sisters. Today we draw a line in the sand because I don't know about you. I've had enough.
Through an interpreter, Lech Wałęsa urged American workers to rely on solidarity to deal with all the problems confronting us.
Solidarnie pokonaliśmy.
We used solidarity to dismantle the communist system, to bring it down. Now let us stay in solidarity in order to resolve our problems and challenges.
The UAW says members at General Dynamics have overwhelmingly approved a new contract covering 1,500 workers and 3,000 retirees. The union says the contract includes pay raises, pension improvements, and adjustable work hours. The UAW says the contract also includes stronger job security language. The new contract covers worker plants in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. General Dynamics builds military equipment, including the Abrams battle tank and the Stryker infantry vehicle. The big three U.S. automakers are looking at reinvesting in the state that gave birth to the auto industry. Jesse Russell reports.
GM, Ford, and Chrysler would invest as much as $2 billion into Michigan thanks to tax breaks from the state. The Michigan Economic Growth Authority said on Tuesday that the $2.1 billion in tax breaks will provide the auto companies with incentives to invest in 17 projects in the state. Chrysler's credit is the most substantial. It's for 20 years and is worth $1.3 billion. The early plans for the credit include plant upgrades and adding new shifts at currently operating plants. Ford's credit is for $909 million for 15 years. That'll go toward providing new employment opportunities for auto workers and opening or reopening plants. And GM had already received a tax credit for developing a hybrid battery plant in the state. But on Tuesday, it was announced the credit will be expanded with an additional $25 million. That credit will likely see the addition of 4,000 employees in the Detroit region.
Studies suggest 15 to 25% of all construction workers in New York State are misclassified as independent contractors. The new Fair Play Act that became law Tuesday will punish this misclassification with fines and criminal penalties. Delaware enacted similar legislation in 2009, and Pennsylvania passed legislation this month. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, and from the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Shipbuilders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got it!
Yesterday, Governor Rendell signed an executive order banning further leasing of state land for natural gas drilling. He also challenged the gubernatorial candidates to continue the moratorium that he signed after he leaves office in January. Quickly, a campaign spokesman for Republican candidate Tom Corbett said Mr. Corbett would rescind Rendell's moratorium on leasing additional state land for natural gas drilling if the Republican were elected as governor. And of course, welcome to day 26 of the Pennsylvania Republican-controlled Senate's failure to pass a rational Marcellus shale extraction tax. We are now 26 days past the broken promise to Pennsylvanians, and yet they're still collecting a paycheck. Kind of makes me wonder. I've got State Representative Eugene Pasquale on the phone. Eugene, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Rick. Good evening.
I appreciate you taking some time for me. You know, I'm looking, first and foremost, I think this Marcellus Shale thing is a huge campaign issue right now.
Well, it is, and I'm glad you brought up the moratorium, because in case people think out there that this is just some, you know, liberal democratic idea of putting a moratorium on drilling on state lands, additional drilling, this bill actually passed the House by slightly over 150 votes. In the spring, we put up a moratorium vote, and it was overwhelmingly, it was close to 75% of the legislature, just about every Democrat and the majority of Republicans voted for it. So, that's how out of step Mr. Corbett is on this issue.
I gotta be honest with you, it makes perfect sense to me, because we haven't figured out what the basic rules of the game are. The drillers are coming in and they don't even know what's gonna happen. I mean, from a pure business standpoint, we're really doing a disservice to them as well by not having a clear set of guidelines for them to follow.
I think that's, not only is that correct, but I think there are the responsible drilling companies, and they do exist. They admit that they should have been a little bit more proactive from the beginning instead of resisting a lot of items, that they should have been a little bit more proactive as well and made this more of a partisan issue than it really should have been. And now a lot of them, again, the responsible ones, they're sitting going, now, wait a minute, they almost think Corbett is crazy for his position because they're like, well, wait a minute, we never thought we would have zero tax because there's things that they want. They want the thing that the responsible drillers want. They want a tax rate that they know what it's going to be, and they want a regulatory system that they know what it's going to be, and they also want to ensure that there are the appropriate level of inspectors and permit staff at the Department of Environmental Protection to make sure they can continue to operate their business, and they also want to make sure that the bad actors get fined appropriately or shut down for doing for damaging the environment. And right now we're in this neverland because of inaction by the Senate.
Yeah, I've been saying since the Senate left that this is the biggest campaign issue because they turn their back on their responsibility. Look, if I don't do what I say I'm going to do on time to my employer, they set me out on the curb. Yet we've got a Senate who thinks they made a promise and they can just turn their back on it. To me, this should be a major issue, and I'm just not seeing it.
I agree with you, but it is par for the course for the Pennsylvania Senate. I mean, this is a body that has done nothing. They have a bill to ban texting while driving that has been sitting there for months. They voted to table that. Handheld cell phones, getting recalled toys off the shelf. You just go on and on and on with them. And I literally don't know what they do.
Well, look, you know, here's the thing. I understand partisanship. Well, we do a partisan kind of program here. I understand it. But there's a difference between partisan politic and governing. And what I think has gone on is we've gone too far to the policy, to the partisan politic with people who, A, don't believe in government, and B, don't want any part of government, yet they're in the power, halls of power. That concerns me greatly.
I think that you are hitting the nail on the head. Not only is it about politics, but I think you're really looking at a lot of them don't believe in government at all. I mean, we always have and always will have a debate about the appropriate level of government. And as time goes, there'll be one side will get a little bit of the upper hand in the argument than the other. That's just the nature of our democracy. But what you have really taking over here is people that literally don't believe in government, don't believe that the government has any role in protecting our water and our land, that it doesn't have the right role in protecting workplace rights. I mean, listen, if you really dig deep into the Attorney General's campaign, you will see that it is probably one of the more conservative, if not even extreme, campaigns of any campaign in the history of Pennsylvania governor. I mean, it really does put Tom Ridge, makes him almost appear moderate or liberal by comparison.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with State Representative Eugene DePasquale. He's from the 95th Legislative District down there in York County. You know what's really got me here is I'm starting to hear, and you bring up the fact that Corbett is extreme. I think Pat Toomey is extremely extreme. And you go around the country and you look at these different candidates, the guy in West Virginia, the guy in Wisconsin, just the guy in Alaska. They're way out, but they're saying the things that they've been whispering to each other in their little think tanks and in their secret societies, like get rid of minimum wage, get rid of unemployment compensation, pretty much get rid of the whole 20th century.
First of all, the luckiest thing that ever happened to Pat Toomey, and I do believe that he is an extreme candidate, and not only do I believe that, but, I mean, Rick Santorum, who is no liberal, said that Pat Toomey is too conservative for Pennsylvania. I mean, that's Rick Santorum's words, not yours, not mine. But I think from a just pure practical political sense, the luckiest thing that ever happened to him was all these literally insane candidates in these other parts of the country that make him look like he's not as crazy.
Yep.
I still think Joe Sestak's going to win, but in the national scheme of it, I mean, comparing Christine O'Donnell, and who is just, you don't even know where to begin or end there, Sharon Angle, Joe Miller, and this guy in West Virginia. I mean, his wife can't vote for him because they live in Florida. I mean, they just got a permit for a $1 million extension renovation from their local government in Florida. This is like it happened today. They just got the permit today for their home in Florida. Now, I'm not talking about like a retirement home. I'm not talking about their summer vacation home. That's where they live. His wife can't vote for him. And he's running for Senate in West Virginia. It's unbelievable.
And the sad thing is he may win.
Well, he's in the ballgame. I think Governor Manchin's going to win the race. But the idea that it is even close, I mean, you have a guy who isn't even a resident, I mean, I guess technically he's a resident of the state, but who really resides in Florida, who Rush Limbaugh got caught endorsing him because they live in the same neighborhood. Rush lives in Florida, and who doesn't even believe in the minimum wage, and who sought out to hire actors for his commercial, and in the ad, put in the Philadelphia Inquirer, sought hick actors.
Yeah, hickey and blue collar. Hickey and blue collar.
Hickey, blue collar actors. I mean, could you imagine in any other election cycle somebody getting away with that in West Virginia? But that's the climate we're in right now.
I got to be honest, though. It kind of shows how his lack of intelligence, though. Because I got to be honest with you. If I'm looking for quote unquote hickey and blue collar, South Philly is not the place I'm going for hickey and blue collar.
Well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, but what scares me is if these people get power, say what you want about Newt Gingrich, and I'm the furthest thing from a Newt Gingrich fan, but I do think the guy knew how to negotiate with President Clinton, and he did believe in there was a role in government. And if you saw what happened, again, you and I may have a lot of disagreements with how he approached those negotiations, but he did negotiate, and he was the leader of the group that took over. What is it going to be like with John Boehner with this group of crackpots that could potentially come in to take power?
I got to tell you, though, Representative DePasquale, there's part of me that really would love to see all the crazy people there, because it will be like Barnum and Bailey. It will be a three-ring circus. And sitting in the chair that I'm sitting in right now, that is radio gold.
For your radio show, if I were you, I think that would be great radio, great for ratings, and the public would be outraged. In my role as a legislator, and I know you care deeply about the public as well, I don't think we can afford to have these people making these decisions for 2 years.
Is there an opportunity? I mean, I look at the woman in Delaware who I don't believe is even smart enough to touch herself, let alone want to. But wouldn't it be funny just to have her there so that you could go, look, this is what you voted for. And maybe people would wake up. Maybe at some point we shake the electorate awake.
Think about it. If you are living in Alaska right now, and thinking about voting for Joe Miller, you're voting for a guy that literally has admitted that he's a fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, he's admitted that in the last week.
Yep.
I mean, where do you even begin on that one? I mean, but let's come back even to Pennsylvania. I mean, here in a state with the second largest senior population, I mean, I think Congressman Sestak has been very good at pounding away in this the last couple of weeks. But it would be the first time. I mean, Rick Santorum got into a jam in the 94 election for talking about raising the retirement age. Toomey's not for raising it. He's for privatizing Social Security. And that's a huge difference. And the fact that that is even, again, a close race is stunning.
No, it is. And I was going to bring that up here in a minute, because one of the things I've been asking people is if they – because I learned something about Toomey, and I brought this up with an earlier guest, that Pat Toomey's father was a union member. That, you know, Pat Toomey as a child benefited from, you know, a parent working that made good, solid wages, health care. His father is getting some pension retirement security so that Pat doesn't have to take care of him with his millions. I think that's a good thing, yet you've got a guy who's vehemently anti-union.
And he's vehemently against the social safety net that he benefited from.
Yeah,
that's the hypocrisy.
And I ask myself, how do you get to that point? How do you turn your back on where you came from?
He's got to look himself in the mirror on that one.
I mean, I understand. I understand you went to Wall Street. You made a whole bunch of money, made a pile of money. You then went on to become the president of the Club for Growth. They paid you a pile of money. I get it. I understand. You know, you filled your coffers. But how about, you know, leaving a crumb or two for the other guys behind you?
Make no mistake about it. There's two things I think are critical when it comes to Pat Toomey. One is, there's a reason why all this outside money is flowing in for him. He is their guy.
Yep.
Nationally speaking, I mean, they may like Sharon Angle or not like her, or, you know, Christine O'Donnell. Pat Toomey is their guy.
He's the winner.
He is their leader. So that's why he is getting so much support from the outside. Number two, some of them may not be so bright, or they may not even know the ramifications of everything they say. Make no mistake about it. Pat Toomey is a smart guy.
Oh, yeah. I've never said anything but that.
He is a smart
He's
guy.
He's dangerous.
This is a philosophy of his. This is not he has a couple positions that you might view as a little bit out of the mainstream, but this is his philosophy. He basically believes that there should be almost no government. And that, look, history has shown that that leads to economic collapse.
Yep, absolutely. Let me ask you a last question I've got here for you. You know, one of the big consequences that I don't hear many people talking about, but the census was just completed. We're going to be doing some redistricting at some point
right.
in the very near future. I got to tell you, I'm worried. I'm looking at what happened in Texas, what Tom DeLay's on trial for now.
Right.
I'm looking here, and I'm kind of worried.
Two things. One, this is why I and other reformers in the House have been fighting to try to have a nonpartisan reapportionment system to begin with, because districts should not be drawn based on who wins an election. I would say that even if it's the Democrats. I don't think we should have gerrymandered incumbent protection. I don't think that serves the public well. I don't think that serves our public institutions well. And I don't think it furthers our democracy. So that I would say that I fought for that bill when we were in the majority. Hopefully we're still going to be. And if we're still in, I would still fight for that. But I just want to let let all your viewers know, I don't believe in protecting incumbents through reapportionment to begin with.
No, I don't either. But I want races that are going to be competitive.
That's right. You want competitive races.
Absolutely.
What we have seen them pull, they have pulled in the past in Pennsylvania, and the only thing that caused it to implode on them was the absolute disaster of the Bush presidency. They did this again after the 2000 election. People forget that if you look at the John Purcell district today in the State House, and how some of those southeastern Pennsylvania districts are drawn. And if you look at some of the congressional maps in the southwestern part of the state, I mean, it's embarrassing. I mean, literally, you can just see what they were trying to do there, and it will happen again. That's how they play the game.
Well, how would we get to a place where it's nonpartisan? It's in someone else's hands beside the body politic.
You can do basically the way they did it in Iowa. You have an independent civilian commission that's headed by a retired judge. And Iowa, in 2002, they have five congressional districts. Four of the five were decided by 2.5 percentage points or less. Four of the five. There was in 2002, I think there were 10 races in the country total that fell into that category. Iowa had four of the 10.
How do we get to that?
I think we just take the Iowa model, which we actually have introduced as legislation in the State House, and we push that through. That is the model. What Iowa has done is the model. And that was, I think they had a Republican Senate, Democratic House, and a Republican governor when they originally passed that, and it wasn't partisan. It was just decided that we are going to draw districts based on the public interest, not on the interest of elected officials.
Boy, wouldn't that be nice? Last thing.
Shocking.
What's your prediction for next Tuesday?
I think that we are going to be much closer than people realize. I think if we get our turnout up, especially in the Southeast, I think Dan Onorato will win for governor and Joe Sestak will win for the Senate. But I say that's if our people do not go out and vote, we will lose. I mean, that is, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. But I think if we get our base out to vote, we will win. And I think we're going to hold the State House. The State Senate is obviously a much tougher situation. And the congressional races, I'm not as in tune to that. That because in my congressional district, it's a pretty tough sledding for us. But I'm not quite as sure as how that's going to go. I think nationwide, though, we will clearly lose seats in the House and the Senate. I do think we are going to hold the majority in the Senate. And the House races, it's literally going to be coming down to get out the vote in those, 10 or 15 key districts.
And it's going to take citizens doing what they're supposed to do, going and casting their vote.
I want to leave you with this. CNN today came out with polls of different races. registered voters, Pennsylvania, Dan Onorato was up 2 over Tom Corbett. Likely voters, down 5. Unregistered voters, Joe Sestak was up 5 or 6. Likely voters, down 2. That's the story. If people vote, we win. If they don't, we lose. It's that simple.
And that's what it comes down to. Representative DePasquale, I appreciate your time. Always great to have you on the program. Look forward to having you back again.
No, my pleasure, Rick. Have a great rest of the night.
You too. We're going to take a quick break right here. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
I'm with you now.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party, pledged to America, says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up, and returning veterans. Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated, but when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, you know, next Tuesday, that's the day. You got to get out and vote. And look, the right understands. They understand if they can disenfranchise you, if they can put up enough roadblocks, you're going to stay home. If they can play enough commercials to say, are you angry? Then stay home. Maybe you will. I mean, the numbers that I've seen that decide who sits in our halls of power are horrible. 11% of the people decide who's going to be governor of our state? Really? And the right wing, they're obsessed. They're absolutely obsessed with stopping people from voting. I've seen reports out there where certain groups are offering $500 bounties for anyone who catches someone who shouldn't be voting. You believe that? So we're going to have vigilantes at all the voting polls harassing voters. Because they're looking for their $500. We're going to find that fraud guy, even if we got to make him up. And what I find is really interesting is the fact that most of the voter fraud that goes on is stuff that the Republicans have done. I mean, you go back and you look at the caging that they've done for the last 10 years that the Bush people mastered. And I explained this to my wife because we got a letter in the mail that said you got to verify your address. And I said, well, you know, that's just a way of taking you off the voting rolls. So they can say, well, you didn't respond or, well, you know, hey, that's not your address or whatever. So they can stop you from voting. You look at what happened in 2000 in Florida. They went in and they said, well, you know what? We're gonna throw all these people off the voting rolls because their name looks like people who might be felons. In fact, I think, if I remember right, there was a guy who, in 2000, they predicted would be a convicted felon in 2007. It was right there on their form. He was convicted in the future of a felony, so he wasn't allowed to vote. So now they've gone from, you know, throwing people who might be felons off the rolls to people who might be felons in the future. You look at 2000 when the Ohio Secretary of State said, you know, we're going to change all the voter registration guides to be like 80-pound paper or something. All of these new voter registrations have to be on special paper. Eventually they threw that out and said he couldn't do it, but it could have held up tens of thousands of new registered voters who, I got to tell you, in 2004 were not clamoring to the Bush administration. People in my hometown of Cleveland were standing in line for 10 hours waiting to vote. You're going to tell me that they were standing there to vote for George W. Bush? They were going to vote for the status quo? No. And to be honest, the only people really that I've seen who have been convicted of voter fraud are conservatives. You go back to June 16th of 2009. The Los Angeles Times reported the owner of a voter registration company pleaded guilty to voter registration fraud. His name was Mark Jacobs. He was the head of Young Political Majors, and he found guilty voter fraud. A couple other people, two Republicans registered voter registration workers were sentenced Wednesday. This is back in 2002. To 4 months in jail after pleading guilty to voter fraud for forging signatures. They actually went to jail. And I know my T-Twizzler friends will go, Acorn! 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 The fraud, if you will, in the whole Acorn scenario was not Acorn's doing. The fraud was perpetrated against Acorn. They hired people to go out and register voters. Well, what some of these people did, some very unscrupulous people, sat down, opened up a phone book, and just wrote names down. Acorn turned them in. And the right, the corporate-controlled for-profit media, spun that around to where Acorn was the one who was perpetrating this. Couldn't have been further from the truth. But the right had their villain. And why did they have their villain? Well, Acorn had to be destroyed. They had to be taken down because they were organizing those people. And we can't organize those people. We want to keep those people in their housing projects. We want to keep those people in the poor communities, in the failing schools. We want to keep those people segregated. We want them separate from the rest of us because those people will bring us down. I'm not kidding you. That is the mentality. And that's why Acorn had to be brought down, because they were organizing poor people. And I've always said, if you could get the people who are in poverty to vote at the same rate that the people who are sitting in the CEO boardrooms, this would be a much different country, my friends. A much different country. And look, at the end of this, the one thing that we have, our birthright in this country, is to exercise our right of self-government, exercise our right to vote. And it's painful to think that some people don't take that responsibility, that right, in the same way that I do. You know, people, you love to hear the right say, well, you know, people fought, bled, and died, so we can be free. Well, they fought, bled, and died so we could vote. So I say on November 2nd, you go to the polls and you cast your vote. And maybe before you get there, take a little time. Read up on the candidates. Say, which one's for me? I always think back to my government teacher, my high school government teacher, who had a very simple analogy. This is back in 1984. He said, you know, at the end of the day, Republicans are going to be for the very wealthy. They're going to want to destroy government, and they're going to want to have control by the very wealthy. Democrats are going to want bigger government and bigger social programs to help the poor. You folks in the middle, of which most of the people in the class were, you have to decide which you're closer to. Are you closer to the very wealthy or the very poor? Because you're going to end up paying for both. So maybe you should decide which one you want to make comfortable. His other philosophy was, don't bother voting, it makes my vote stronger, although he said that facetiously. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're going to talk about voting when we come back. I think it's important, and that's why I've asked our friend Erwin Aronson to come talk to us a little bit about the history of voter registration here in the state and some of the work he's done. Right back after this.
For and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Look out. They're angry. Foaming at the mouth angry. And they're lashing out, saying they won't take it anymore. As one of their leaders angrily cried, it's a war. Indeed, they're on the move to take their country back. Forget the Tea Party, rowdies. This is the Champagne Party. More precisely, it's the Dom Perignon $1,000-a-bottle champagne party, propelled by, get this, billionaire's rage. Yes, some of the richest, most pampered people on the planet, people who literally wallow in luxury every day with never a concern about losing a job, a home, health care, or getting their kids into college, these people are wailing in self-pity. They are Wall Street hedge fund operators, which essentially means they are high-flying financial flim-flammers. What has stoked them into an elitist fury is an Obama proposal to close off a ridiculous tax loophole that has let them pay only 15% of their lavish income in taxes rather than the 35% rate that us commoners pay. One of the richest of the ragers, Stephen Schwarzman of the Blackstone Group, sees Obama's proposal as an outrageous intrusion into the suites of the elite, comparing it to, quote, when Hitler invaded Poland. This over-the-top tantrum from a multi-billionaire, a guy who spent $3 million in 2007 to throw himself a birthday party. Come on, Steve, pay your taxes. Pathetically, the real root of this sad, sad hedge fund rebellion is a feeling by these powerful, super-privileged megalomaniacs that they are being picked on. One even whined that asking hedge funders to pay taxes at the same rate as everyone else amounts to, quote, the persecution of the minority. This is Jim Hightower saying, good grief, man, get a grip. Next thing you know, they'll hire Glenn Beck to host a weepy telethon to save the billionaire's tax loophole.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. You made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail. But our machines don't leave no paper trail. The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear. That the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. Don't go to the polls on election day. Cause we bought the election and it better go our way. And on election night, we'll sit back and gloat. The billionaires don't want you to vote.
Don't vote.
If you're happy with George Bush in charge.
Well, you know, I gotta tell you. You look at that commercial by Latinos for Reform, who, you know, they want the Latino community all up in arms, firing mad. And what do they want them to do? Nothing. Stay home. Don't vote. Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. Anyway, here in the state of Pennsylvania, I think we need to get people out to vote. And one of the things that's always amazed me is how difficult they used to try and make it to register. And there were people who fought for that. And I've got one of those guys on the phone right here, Erwin Aronson, a good friend of ours. Erwin, welcome to the program.
Good to hear you, Rick. Great show tonight. Been listening in on the webcast, and always exciting to hear Gene DePasquale. What a great guy and a heads-up representative for the folks down in York County. He's doing a great job, and I've known him for a long time, and I was blessed to to know his dad, who was a great union leader in western Pennsylvania for many years and one of my mentors in the early time of my career.
Hey, always a great guest. We've had him on the program a number of times over the years. So great stuff. What I want to talk about is we're seeing a lot of people, the Republicans are saying, here's $500, go find people who are committing voter fraud. I've seen stories where they're actually encouraging people to, the best word I can come up with is harass voters as they go into the polls to make sure that they're registered. Just any Tom, Dick, or Harry. Is this nuts or what?
Well, it is nuts, and it is sadly very, very consistent with my experience here in Pennsylvania and in several other states. It's different in quality this year because this rabid, raging right that has now finally been unshackled, I guess, by the billions of dollars that are pouring into this campaign season have gone very public with what used to be very private about. But voter intimidation and voter annihilation is nothing new. And we're seeing this year a whole lot of old wine in a new bottle, but it's still the same old rancid wine.
Yeah, you know, we sat down, had lunch a week or so ago, and you were telling me about, you know, the 80s when you were fighting to get voter registration easier for people. And I got to be honest, I was shocked to hear the story.
Yeah, well, it's quite a story. It's one of the things that I participated in that I'm most proud as a citizen of this state and of this country. Until 1976, voter registration in this state, in Pennsylvania, was on a county-by-county basis. And when you wanted to register to vote, you not only had to meet all of the existing qualifications, citizenship, age 21, and then later 18, but you had to register to vote when the county courthouse happened to be open. And that meant the system was really rigged against working folks because county courthouses were open in the downtown area of the county seat from, you know, nine in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon, and closed for an hour at lunchtime. And people who had to work for a living couldn't get there to register, and they were disenfranchised. I remember in my earliest days of my political activism, the big thing that we would accomplish would be to get a few of the more progressive counties in this state to allow us to run voter registration drives at shopping areas on Saturdays. And people of the Jewish faith remained disenfranchised because Saturday is their Sabbath.
Right.
Then we got the bright idea, a few of us crazies, that in the early 1970s, that we ought to allow people to register to vote by mail. And I was tasked with the honor as well as the responsibility of drafting legislation for introduction of the Pennsylvania General Assembly in 1976 during the early days of the then upcoming presidential election cycle to allow people to register to vote by mail. And we had extraordinary, just breathtaking opposition, not only from the regular cast of suspects that people anticipated in the Republican Party, but from Democrats as well, because people in the General Assembly had gotten elected to their seats because the registration and voting pattern were exactly the way they needed them to be to get elected, and they didn't want to do anything to change that. But thanks to the dedication and commitment of working people throughout the state, led by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO in those days, we were able to get passed in 1976 the first voter registration by mail statute in Pennsylvania. Got it signed into law by then Governor Milton Schaaf. An amazing sidebar to this is that Milton Schaaf, of course, was a very successful businessman. And he understood as governor that the best business that you could do in a state like Pennsylvania was to treat working people with decency and dignity. And so he dedicated his entire governorship, his entire term, two terms, as governor, to making sure that working folks got a fair shake. So when Governor Schaaf had the opportunity to sign this voter registration by mail legislation that we finally pushed through the legislature, he made it a high priority, and we got it to be a law. We all thought we were on easy street. Pennsylvania, as you and I'm sure many of the listeners know, has 67 counties, so there were 67 courthouses, and you had to send your new voter registration by mail form in to the county courthouse applicable to your county where you live. So the Pennsylvania Election Bureau, right after the passage of the law, and the law required, among other things, with the way I drafted it, to have people be able to register with a postage prepaid form. The Election Bureau printed up a single form and had a tear-off sheet with the address of every county courthouse in the state. And you could fill in your information on one side, write in the address on the other, drop it in the mailbox, and in a few days you'd be registered to vote.
Well, I got to tell you, that sounds like an entire different world than what I went through when I registered to vote, to be honest with you.
Oh, sure. I mean, now we have motor voter. You go to get your driver's license renewed and you get registered to vote.
Yep, but, right there.
Right there, but we're talking about in those old dark days of the 1970s. But in 1976, in Washington, while we were doing these marvelous steps towards progressive access to the franchise for people in Pennsylvania, in Washington we had a guy named Gerry Ford who was president of the United States, anointed or appointed president in those dark days after Dick Nixon did what Dick Nixon did to all of us Americans.
Yep.
And there's an office, a headquarters on L'Enfant Plaza in Washington, D.C. for the United States Postal Service. And in that building, in a cubicle on the 19th or 20th floor of a high-rise federal office building, there was a guy who was the director of mail classification for the United States of America. And knowing what the U.S. Postal Service, clearly a nonpartisan agency, right, had to do with this system I just described to you, the head of mail classifications in that cubicle decided that Pennsylvania's voter registration by mail system in 1976 had a fundamental flaw, and he was bringing it to an end unilaterally, despite the action of the House of Pennsylvania, the Senate of Pennsylvania, the Governor of Pennsylvania, because in his view, if you had a prepaid postage permit on anything, you had to have a pre-printed address. And since we had provided for filling in the blanks for the addresses of the 67 county courthouses, he ruled it impermissible. And in that summer of 1976, this guy somewhere in the middle of a office building in a cubicle working for the Republican Party decided that it wouldn't bode well for them to have people register to vote in Pennsylvania because they might, perish the thought, actually exercise their right to vote once they registered.
Yeah.
And the result was he halted everything. And we had to go back to the drawing boards and print up 67 different forms for 67 different counties and get them distributed in the right places. And we did it anyway, and we still won the election. And literally 900,000 new voters in 1976 registered to vote by mail in Pennsylvania because of that law.
And that sounds incredible. And the reason I think it's important is I think it's important to A, remember, and B, learn what it took for us to get to this point. But the question I guess I have is, right now it's so easy to vote that I don't think most people do. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me. It's easy to register. There's all you got to do is show up, take a couple of minutes, and make your selections. Yet we've got such a small number of people who do it.
Well, you know what, Rick? It's a different time than it was. And while I agree with you now it is exponentially more easy to register to vote, it's no easier to vote today than it was in 1776. We still vote in this state based on a decision that's made over a 13-hour period on a cold day in November. And we decide what the future of our state is going to be in that one 13-hour period. This year, we're going to decide what legislative districts and state senate districts and congressional districts are going to look like for the next decade in a 13-hour period on one day in November. It seems to me, candidly, that if we can pay our bills online and I can listen to your show online and I can have my kids register for classes at college online, we ought to be able to vote online.
Yeah, I think they tried that here recently, and the system that they came up with was hacked by everybody and their brother.
Well, you know, there are systems that are hackable, and there are systems that are protectable. If today international banking can go on unfettered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I think that if somebody really put their mind to it, they could have a system that has enough security protection built in to that as well. Unfortunately, too many people try to rig too many systems. That's why we had hanging chads in Florida 10 years ago when people like me had to deal with the problem of election theft by intimidation and coercion and by obfuscation on the ballots in the state of Florida. And I just was in Florida recently, and I looked at a sample ballot in Palm Beach County where all the problems were 10 years ago, and guess what? The ballots are equally goofy now.
Amazing stuff. And you know what? Here's what bothers me. You know, I remember 2004 when John Kerry had lawyers everywhere because they really thought that the Republicans were going to, the Bush administration was going to do a whole bunch of stuff, and they did. And, you know, I think now it's come down to people standing up for their rights and having the ability of people like you to help them. Because I can remember in 2004, there were lawyers at every poll that I worked at in Allentown.
Well, this year we have a very extensive voter protection plan coordinated in every community in this state. I'm very pleased and proud to be actively engaged in that in the steering committee, and I'm literally bowled over by the number of talented, committed, dedicated lawyers in every corner of Pennsylvania who have stepped forward to volunteer their time. They're going through training right now. I conducted a bit of a training session earlier this evening. We have training going on over the next several days all the way up through Monday, where lawyers are giving of their time to learn the details of election law. They have manuals and they have understandings of voter rights, and they have secured through the training an understanding of various and sundry intimidation activities that those of us with some experience have seen firsthand. They know what to look for. They know how to interview witnesses and victims of voter intimidation and voter fraud and voter frustration. And we're just not going to let that happen here in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And I'm pleased to be part of that. And this is not about Democrats. This is not about Republicans. This is about the franchise.
It's about the right to vote. Can you stick around for a second? I have to take a break here.
Sure.
I want to talk about when we come back what to do if you go to the polls and someone gets in your face and accuses you of something, who knows what they should do. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-527-7425. Right back after this.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
If your loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show. Somebody watching you again.
Somebody watching you again. Well, you know, that's what they're talking about. That's what the bully class is saying. They, you know, the Republicans are saying, hey, we're gonna find you if you're We're going to find you, and we're going to harass you, and we're going to make it uncomfortable for voters to go to the polls. And there's got to be something to stop that. I've got Erwin Aronson on the phone. He's an attorney here in the area, one of our favorite guests on the program. Erwin, thanks for sticking around.
Oh, thanks for having me and for exploring such an important issue as we, you know, come to these final days before Election Day.
You know, what do I do? Let's say I go to the polls and someone's got my name on a list. What do I do?
Well, the first thing to do is recognize that you have a right to vote. And this is every bit as fundamental and basic and precious a right as anybody ever has. Be loud, be proud. Don't take these things sitting down. Don't just be passive about it. Demand your right to vote. You have a right to have a provisional ballot that you can cast. And if there's a vague challenge and there's no legitimacy to it, your provisional ballot will be counted. And if there is if there's a basis for the challenge, your provisional vote will be set aside. More importantly, I mean, God bless technology. We have cell phones. Virtually everybody carries a cell phone or has access to them. And if you don't have access to a cell phone, at the polling place, demand to have a telephone right there and put a call into the following number, 1-800-311-VOTE, 1-800-311-VOTE. That's a voter information hotline. It'll be staffed by lawyers who are at the ready. They can give guidance over the phone. They will come to the polling places if necessary. We'll have people available to protect voters' rights, go into court if we have to make sure that nobody who has a right to vote in this state, no matter where he or she may be found, will be denied that right.
Can you give that number one more time?
Sure. 1-800-311-VOTE. 1-800-311-VOTE.
We'll make sure we put that up on our website at thericksmithshow.com so people have the opportunity to take a look at that. And we'll put it on the Twitters and on the Facebook as well to make sure that it gets out there. Because I remember 2004, because I did an awful lot of work in the campaign, in the Kerry campaign back in 2004 in Allentown. And I just remember that there were a bunch of people challenging, folks coming in to vote, and I remember being shocked by it, going, here? Really?
And yeah, well, these goon squads are going to be everywhere, we're afraid, but we are going to fight back, and for every one of those goon squads, I got a team of people ranging from highly skilled, highly trained lawyers to business representatives and organizers from many of the labor organizations to political activists on both sides of the aisle, all sides of the spectrum. To make sure that doesn't happen. I mean, we're hearing stories. We have the latest one I heard just yesterday, about this time yesterday, in a community that I'm not going to name here, but in Pennsylvania, not far from Harrisburg, actually. Every Ford Crown Victoria that can be rented has been locked up by an intimidation group who are planning on sending out Ford Crown Victorias to heavily populated minority polling places with a couple of white guys sitting in the seats in sunglasses, talking into their hands, making it appear as if they're the police, just watching, and they are using the Ford Crown Victorias because they're frequently used as police cars and official vehicles, just as an intimidation tactic. And we're not going to have that. We know what they're doing. Just yesterday, the United States Court of Appeals for the circuit in Arizona overruled in a 2-1 decision an attempted Arizona approach that said it would be permissible to demand that people demonstrate their citizenship when they come to vote. And in a special panel at a special hearing in which former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who happens to be from Arizona, sat by special designation along with two circuit court judges, the circuit court shot that effort down and said that the United States National Voter Protection Act takes precedence, if you will, over any activity of any state. And since the United States Voter Protection Act doesn't require or even permit that, the state of Arizona wouldn't be permitted to do it either.
So let me ask you this then. If you go to the voting polls, do you have to produce any, what do you have to produce?
You have to produce nothing but yourself unless you're a first-time voter. A first-time voter needs a, may be asked for a government-issued ID, but only first-time voters, anybody else, as long as they voted in the past, there's a sample signature at every polling place in Pennsylvania associated with places where people are registered to vote, and all they need to do is be able to sign their name, and a judge of election or election staff person will review the signatures, match them up, and you're allowed to go vote.
Because, you know, you hear an awful lot of things, and I've heard this recently, saying, well, you know, here in the state of Pennsylvania, you got to have a driver's license to vote.
Absolutely not, unless you're a first-time voter.
You would have to have a driver's license if you're a first-time voter.
Not a driver's license necessarily, but some government agency-issued identification, a gun carry permit, a driver's license, a photo ID if you're not a driver. I think that even something that would be issued as a pass for a Port Authority transportation company that's a government, transportation organization that's a government entity. Anything that is a government-issued ID.
Okay. Let me ask you the last question I've got for you. I look at this this incident that happened in Kentucky where this woman was thrown to the ground and stepped on, stomped on by some big big thug. I'm curious. I'm hoping it doesn't happen, but you know what would somebody do if that happens when you're in line to vote?
If it happens when you're in line to vote in my jurisdiction, yell as loud as you can, and I'll be there myself. We will have lawyers available at the ready for any incident of any sort or kind, and if anybody does that on my watch, they better watch out because they'll rue the day with that they interfered with the franchise of people in our country and in our state and this critical election.
Let me ask you, you know, are you surprised that these guys who threw this girl to the ground and stomped on her aren't sitting in jail?
I'm surprised that they weren't arrested. I know, I mean, intriguingly enough, when you get to be my age, you get a little bit of experience. In the election cycle that you were talking about, in the actually the one before that, the Gore v. Bush cycle, in Allentown, of all places, a very dear friend of mine was participating in security at a rally on behalf of then Vice President, presidential candidate Al Gore. And a woman came to the security line without the proper identification, without the proper badges, without the proper tagging. And she attempted to jump the line. Person I know asked her, very nicely, actually, to please stay on the other side of the line. She provoked a fight. Ultimately, she pushed him, and he restrained her by putting, gently, I might add, his hands on her shoulders. The gendarmes, the police in Allentown arrested him, and a trial ensued. Ultimately, he was acquitted in that trial. But there was no injury, there was no punching, there was no biting, there was no kicking. There was not even a voice raising on the part of the security side of things. And he was arrested. That's Pennsylvania. That's Allentown. I was troubled by it, but I understand it in the context.
Yeah, I've been saying is if it were a Democrat that stomped a conservative, they'd be firing up old Sparky right now.
Well, listen, it was a Rand Paul lunatic supporter who stomped on and put his foot on the head of a kid, somebody younger than my children, actually. And the reaction from the right was that Rush Limbaugh was trying to marginalize it, minimize it, and blame her for it. You know, I saw an ad today that somebody put up on the Internet that was a joke, I guess, ad about Rand Paul that said, "Elect Rand Paul. He'll stomp on Social Security the way we stomp on hippie chicks' heads."
Yep, I saw red jacketed hippie chicks. That's
red
right.
Jacketed hippie chicks. That's the one.
Yeah, that's a beautiful ad.
The one. But I'm going to tell you now that I can't stop it from happening in Pennsylvania, but I will tell you that I and my colleagues will prosecute it to the fullest extent of the law. We're not going to back down. We're not going to back up. We're not going to give in. We're not prepared to yield one inch when it comes to the protecting the right of the people to have their vote.
And that is the perfect place to end this. Irwin Aronson, I appreciate your time. Have a great night. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. Take well. Take care. Be well.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Welcome to the Building Trade Solidarity Rally in Times Square.
New York Building and Construction Trades President Gary LaBarbera. Thousands of building trades workers rallied with former Polish president and labor legend Lech Wałęsa to protest non-union builders.
They exploit workers every day. I can tell you something, brothers and sisters. Today we draw a line in the sand because I don't know about you. I've had enough.
Through an interpreter, Lech Wałęsa urged American workers to rely on solidarity to deal with all the problems confronting us.
We use solidarity to dismantle the communist system, to bring it down. Now let us stay in solidarity in order to resolve our problems and challenges.
The UAW says members at General Dynamics have overwhelmingly approved a new contract covering 1,500 workers and 3,000 retirees. The union says the contract includes pay raises, pension improvements, and adjustable work hours. The UAW says the contract also includes stronger job security language. The new contract covers workers at plants in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. General Dynamics builds military equipment, including the Abrams battle tank and the Stryker infantry vehicle. The big three U.S. automakers are looking at reinvesting in the state that gave birth to the auto industry. Jesse Russell reports.
GM, Ford, and Chrysler would invest as much as $2 billion into Michigan thanks to tax breaks from the state. The Michigan Economic Growth Authority said on Tuesday that the $2.1 billion in tax breaks will provide the auto companies with incentives to invest in 17 projects in the state. Chrysler's credit is the most substantial. It's for 20 years and is worth $1.3 billion. The early plans for the credit include plant upgrades and adding new shifts at currently operating plants. Ford's credit is for $909 million for 15 years. That'll go toward providing new employment opportunities for auto workers and opening or reopening plants. And GM had already received a tax credit for developing a hybrid battery plant in the state. But on Tuesday, it was announced the credit will be expanded with an additional $25 million. That credit will likely see the addition of 4,000 employees in the Detroit region.
Studies suggest 15 to 25% of all construction workers in New York State are misclassified as independent contractors. The new Fair Play Act that became law Tuesday will punish this misclassification with fines and criminal penalties. Delaware enacted similar legislation in 2009, and Pennsylvania passed legislation this month. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, and from the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Shipbuilders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Fascist, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized to fight.
You know, Mr. High Tops there. Really, I mean, that's kind of what you'd call him. Call him a fascist. You know, this girl's trying to just trying to hold up a sign, trying to get her picture taken with the Rand Meister there, and they throw her to the ground and they step on her. And look, you know, this is a party that's not adverse to violence. They'd be more than happy to do this kind of stuff all over the place, which is why I asked her when. What do you do if someone throws you to the ground? What do you do if you're in line to vote and someone says, you can't be here? What do you do? Over the weekend, because we have a weekend program that we do on another station, and if you want to find that, you can go to the ricksmithshow.com, our website, to find other station information. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. One of our listeners emailed me and said, hey, have you seen this? And we talked about this on our weekend program. I don't think I talked about it this week. But there's this pastor, and this is one of those things that really grabs me. when a pastor says the kind of things that this guy said. He's also a Republican congressional candidate. His name's Stephen Brodin, down in Texas, according to the Dallas Morning News. He was being interviewed, and he said, "We have a constitutional remedy, and the framers say that if we don't work, revolution." He says, "If government's not producing the results or becomes destructive to the ends of liberties, we have the right to get rid of that government and get rid of it by any means necessary." As he pointed out, the nation was founded on a revolution and a revolt against Britain's King George III. And here's the quote that grabbed everybody's attention. "The option is on the table." He's talking about violence. "The option's on the table. I don't think that we should remove anything from the table as it relates to our liberties or our freedoms." He wouldn't elaborate. He said, however, it's not the first option. So you go back and you think about what the one in Nevada said. Well, we're going to do it at the ballot box first, and then if we have to, the bullet box. So they're these veiled, what I'm calling veiled threats. Vote for me or there's going to be chaos. And there's got to be a pushback to this. Because, I know most people, they don't want to stand in line and have someone question them. And I think the right knows that. I think the right knows that all they have to do is be there. Be that intimidating image, like Irwin talked about with the Crown Vicks. Just have that symbol there. The car across the street with the tinted windows, they're watching you. That's enough to make people go, I'm a little uncomfortable, so we're not going to vote. Or if someone walks up to you and starts questioning you about your right, most people aren't going to stand there and fight back. Now, I think of myself. I, unfortunately, would probably do the wrong thing, which would be strangle somebody. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Because, I look at that thing at the rally there in Kentucky. If I were her, that scene would have gone a whole different way. I'll tell you that. Interesting stuff. Anyway, the Washington Post had an interesting article today. They wrote that most Americans worry about the ability to pay the mortgage or the rent, according to their poll. It writes, a majority of Americans now say they are worried about making their mortgage or rent payments, underscoring the extent of economic anxiety in the country heading into the midterms. Post polls show that concerns about housing payments have spiked since 2008. Well, of course, we're in the middle of the worst recession in my lifetime. Of course, people are going to be worried. People are going to be concerned. And this is what's really frustrated me to no end. What's gotten me frustrated is the Republicans aren't going to offer you any help. They're going to make things worse. And they've told you that. There would have been no unemployment extensions. There would have been no food stamp programs expanded. There would have been suffering and pain. And there would have been more people losing their homes. And that's okay with them. When Pat Toomey says, it would have been a harder down. But, my people would have probably been okay. He means it. Look, at the end of it, it's all about the very wealthy getting all of that stuff back that gains at the bargaining table got for us. All those wage increases that we got for years. I remember my grandfather saying, look, it's not going to last long. The rich people don't want you dining in their restaurants. They don't want you living in their neighborhoods. The wealthy don't want you around. They want you to do their work. They want you to clean up after them. They want you to make them a profit. But they don't want you around. They don't want to see you. They don't want to talk to you. They want to be in their own little world, and you can see that. We've got private airports. We've got gated communities. They lead totally separate lives. Yet we've got a class of people in this country who are fighting to make sure that they get tax cuts. Help me with this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, because I'm not getting it. What is it about working people that says, the guy who's on the Forbes 400 list should pay no taxes? Because, I guess there's this theory that if we give them everything, give them all the money, it will somehow trickle down on us. It doesn't work that way. It's never worked that way. But back to this poll, you know, they're saying, look, you know, people are struggling. People are having a tough time. 53% of the people said they're very concerned or somewhat concerned about having money to make their monthly payments. I'm one of those people. You know, like anybody else, I got bills to pay. I've got children that I worry about. You know, who knows what tomorrow is going to hold? But the reality is, I don't think the Republicans are going to take us in the direction that we need to go. They haven't offered anything new. All I keep hearing about are tax cuts. And I'm sure you've heard it too. And we're just being bombarded, inundated with message after message after message, and they're all negative. I've yet to hear a Republican ad that says, vote for me because I have a vision. Vote for me because my plan will pull us out of this. All I keep hearing is, vote for me because I'm not the black guy. Or vote for me because, well, they squandered $814 million and did it do anything for you? When the reality is most people, yeah, it did help. It saved this economy. We would have some reports that I've seen 6 or 7% higher unemployment if we didn't have it. See, but you can't think, people don't think that way. People think, whoo, we dodged a bullet. We were told it was going to be horrible. You know, it's bad, but it's not like they said. Yeah, because we stopped the free fall. We stopped the economy from collapsing. And every one of these debates, and I've watched a ton of debates, every single Republican down the line has looked at that $814 billion recovery package and said, he stands with the president, and he wasted all that money, and he did this. Look, that recovery package saved us. I'm going to tell you that right now. Personally, if you go back to our archives from January, February, March of 2009, I was saying that stimulus has to be huge. It has to be chunky. It's got to be big. It's got to be bold. It's got to prime the pump. It's got to get the economy moving again. And it's got to shock the system. It's got to be a shock. And it wasn't. It wasn't a shock because 40% of it was tax cuts. It's going here. Okay, we're going to give tax cuts to people who don't need it, to rich people. And in the process, we did give tax cuts to working people, but not nearly enough. So 40% of it went to tax cuts. Some of it went to a couple of building projects. And a lot of it went to helping the people who lost their jobs. Not because they wanted to lose their jobs, because the economy was collapsing. They got thrown out in the street. There's the door, buddy. See ya. Went to health care, because those people who lost their jobs, they needed health care. Went to state governments, because a lot of states have this bizarre, we need balanced budgets. Even in times of crisis, we need balanced budgets. So basically, when times are tough, we then cut all the programs that we would need to help people. Is that how I'm getting this? And the answer is yes. That's exactly what it is. And there was a lot of things that were good about that program. But the Democrats just aren't standing on that. They're just not standing up and fighting back. And part of me thinks it's because the messaging has been so perverted. The messaging has been so convoluted and so just negative. You look at the money that's been gone in to convince us that the Democrats just wasted money. Just complete waste. Just a complete waste. Didn't do anything. They did nothing. If you listen to the ads, it's all they're saying. Have you heard any positive ads? Have you heard anything that says, hi, I'm candidate X, and I've got a vision to lead us to the future, and here it is? I've yet to hear that. What I've heard is I've heard the young guns who basically just rehashed all the failures of the late 90s and all the failures of the Bush administration. They just rehashed it. More tax cuts. Did those tax cuts create the jobs that they were supposed to? Did George Bush create the jobs that he was supposed to? I mean, he did promise.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
They didn't. It wasn't there. But this, This did. This did create jobs. It did save jobs. It did what it was supposed to do. It just wasn't big enough. And maybe that's our problem in this country. Maybe our problem is we don't think big enough. I'm going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Look out, they're angry, foaming at the mouth angry, and they're lashing out, saying they won't take it anymore. As one of their leaders angrily cried, it's a war. Indeed, they're on the move to take their country back. Forget the Tea Party, rowdies. This is the Champagne Party. More precisely, it's the Dom Perignon $1,000-a-bottle champagne party, propelled by, get this, Billionaire's Rage. Yes, some of the richest, most pampered people on the planet, people who literally wallow in luxury every day, with never a concern about losing a job, a home, health care, or getting their kids into college, these people are wailing in self-pity. They are Wall Street hedge fund operators, which essentially means they are high-flying financial flim-flammers. What has stoked them into an elitist fury is an Obama proposal to close off a ridiculous tax loophole that has let them pay only 15% of their lavish income in taxes rather than the 35% rate that us commoners pay. One of the richest of the ragers, Stephen Schwarzman of the Blackstone Group, sees Obama's proposal as an outrageous intrusion into the suites of the elite, comparing it to, quote, when Hitler invaded Poland. This over-the-top tantrum from a multi-billionaire, a guy who spent $3 million in 2007 to throw himself a birthday party. Come on, Steve, pay your taxes. Pathetically, the real root of this sad, sad hedge fund rebellion is a feeling by these powerful, super-privileged megalomaniacs that they are being picked on. One even whined that asking hedge funders to pay taxes at the same rate as everyone else amounts to, quote, the persecution of the minority. This is Jim Hightower saying, good grief, man, get a grip. Next thing you know, they'll hire Glenn Beck to host a weepy telethon to save the billionaire's tax loophole.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, that's what we got to do, folks. We got to come together. This November 2nd is too important to sit home, too important to be really intimidated and threatened. This November 2nd, important day, because there's so much on the line here. Who's going to control the U.S. House? Who's going to control the U.S. Senate? Who's going to control our state legislature? Who's going to sit in the governor's mansion? I mean, this, to me, this is the time when people really need to vote. Yeah, I know people like the big sexy elections of the presidential years, but you know, this is what affects your life the most. You know, voting for Barack Obama was a good thing for me. I said, yep, this is the first time I've gone to the poll to vote for somebody for president. It had always been in the past somebody, well, you know, it's the lesser of two evils. But in 2008, I went to vote specifically for Obama. And I'm proud of that, and I will stand by that. But right now, these decisions right now, who's going to sit in the legislature? Who's going to sit in the governor's mansion? These affect our lives directly. You got Tom Corbett who's come out and said, no tax, no taxes, no tax increases, nope, no fee increases, none of that, stop, zip. What that tells me is that my state, my local taxes are going to go up, my school taxes are going to go up, because there's going to be no more money coming from the state to my local government, to my local school. There's going to be no money for the libraries. So that means there'll be less services at the library. And maybe it'll mean that they're going to have to start charging a fee to use the library, which has been discussed. And what that means then is it means less services. And that means I'm going to have to pay for services. Think about what that means. Because, you know, I've had these conversations before with friends who, my one libertarian friend, he actually thinks that we should get a bill for everything that we use. So every month we should get a bill from the U.S. military writing out our check to the U.S. military so that we'd be aware of what they're spending. And in theory, it's a nice idea. In theory, in practice, it's insane. Because the waste of paper and the number of man hours that you would need to do it is just mind-boggling. But, you know, there's a theory there. At least he's got an idea. He hasn't thought it through real well, but he's got an idea. So every month you get a bill from the fire department, you get a bill from the police department, and if you don't pay those bills, they don't come. Like the people in Tennessee learned when they didn't pay their local fire company. They came. They came with a pack of hot dogs and some marshmallows. They didn't put any fire out, but they came to roast weenies. All because they didn't pay the $75 a year for the fire subscription. Which to me, I think that's one of those things that, I'm sorry, it should be part of my tax base. And to be honest, moving to Pennsylvania was a shock to me. Because a lot of locales, they have private trash pickup. So you have to pay the private trash company. To me, that's a tax. Because where I lived in Ohio, the local governments took the care of the trash. It was part of your taxes. So what they did here, well, we didn't raise your taxes. We didn't do that. Oh, but by the way, this private for-profit garbage company, who's going to put a lot of restrictions on you, what you can and can't throw away, how you do it, all this stuff, now you're going to have to pay them directly. And that's going to be about $200 a year. But it's not a tax, of course. Whereas if the government said, you know what, we need another $200 a year from you to pick up your trash, people would be in the streets rioting. You look at when they deregulated the electric industry. And PP&L told me my rates were going up 36%. I didn't hear a peep out of many people. Did you? But had the government, had the state government said, you know what, we're going to raise electricity taxes 36%, you'd see people with pitchforks and flaming sticks rioting in the streets. But if it's a private for-profit corporation, we don't seem to be all that upset about it. Doesn't it frustrate you? I mean, because we're moving more and more towards the age of everything being privatized. And you being nickel and dimed to death. And you know what? If you can't afford it, if you can't afford fire protection and your house catches on fire, sorry. If you can't afford to pay the police department because you're unemployed and your unemployment check may have run out, somebody robs your house, sorry, you didn't pay the bill. That's what conservative world looks like. That's the world that they're moving us towards. Where corporations run everything. And if there's not a profit in it, it doesn't get done. And I've been saying for a while, and I think it needs to be said more often. Government does the things that for-profit corporations won't do because there's no money in it. But that there's social good to it. Taking care of the elderly. The indigent. There's no money in that. Who's going to pay? They're broke. But as part of a society, having that safety net that says, you know what? We're not going to let old people die in the street. We're going to have nursing homes for them. And we're going to hire people to work in those nursing homes. And you know what? It's going to cost us a couple of bucks. But it's the decent thing to do. And there's no profit in it. In fact, we're going to lose money on it. But it's good for society. And one of the things that's really, really kind of weighing on my mind is I keep hearing the conservatives talk about state workers and policemen and fire departments and all of these very honorable professions. This assault, you know, on the fire unions. They're not even firefighters anymore. They're fire people. I I mean, it's one of those things that they have to figure out how to degrade them first. You've got to tear them down. I remember after 9/11, everybody was enamored. And they were in love with the New York Fire Department. They were in love with the New York Police Department. Everybody was wearing, NYPD hats and fire department hats, and they were just, you know, those are heroes. Those are our heroes. And they had the shirts, you know, all kind of stuff, all the paraphernalia you could possibly imagine to idolize a certain image, not the people, mind you, the image of the people. Because, obviously, it was only the image of them. It wasn't the actual people, because we didn't stand by them once 9/11 was over. We didn't bother to take care of them as they got sick, which is just a national disgrace. But what you're seeing is you have to demonize them first. And it's what we've been doing to steel workers. We've been tearing them down. We've been ripping at the fabric of our culture. And as you tear them down, as you make them unsympathetic characters, well, they're greedy, they're lazy, they're stupid, they're this, they're that. All they want are big, fat, defined pensions. We in the private sector, we don't get pensions. How dare they want pensions? But they have to tear it down. And they have to turn you against them. Like somehow they're your enemy. When the reality is, they're the people who provide the very services that we all depend on and don't even know it. You know, do I want a food inspector who is just a big fat guy who goes, I like to eat food so I can inspect it? No, I want somebody who actually knows how to do some testing, who knows what to look for, who knows the job. I don't know it, but I want somebody who does, and they should be well paid. Why? So they're not bribable. They're not somebody who can be paid off. Look, I'm talking human nature here. You got somebody who's living on a shoestring budget, you know, a couple of shackles might help. I want people who, I want trained firefighters so that, like here in Harrisburg a little over a week ago, you had people who were dying in a fire, and you had these brave men and women going into that fire looking to save those people. Because I'll tell you, if it's me and I'm in that fire and there's a breath left in me, I'm hoping somebody pulls me out. I'm hoping that somebody is trained and qualified. I'm hoping that they're dedicated and committed to their craft. I want that brave fireman to take me, pull me out of there and breathe life back into me. Unfortunately, a little over a week ago, that didn't happen. But not for a lack of trying. Not for a lack of professionalism. I want that. I want trained people. The people who work at the nuclear plants, who are overseeing that. I want somebody who knows what they're doing. I don't want somebody who just got out of college who goes, I read a book. Put me in charge. It's easy to read a book. It's a whole lot tougher to know the real world. And it's what they've done. And I read this article by a guy named Donald Hoffman, and he says, it's time to end public sector indentured servitude. He writes, public service is one of the few places where one can find a defined benefit pot of gold at the end of their employment. Although defined benefit pension are all but extinct in the private sector, most government workers in Pennsylvania are still stuck with these retirement plans. They're stuck with them. This is beautiful. They're stuck with a defined benefit plan that is going to tell them how much they're going to get. And they're going to be able to base their retirement on that. That they're not the ones shouldering the ups and downs of the Wall Street roller coaster. He goes on to say some government pensions reach as high as 70% of recorded earnings. You know, I got to be honest with you. If you work hard and you work a lot of overtime, because he's complaining, well, you know, they earn that much because they pad their salaries with overtime. That means they worked for it, buddy. Don, buddy, they worked for it. And the one thing that he does in this, he puts in parentheses, public service. Degrading it. And guys like this, you know, that's their shtick. You got to tear it down. You got to make it somehow that up is down and black is white. And I ask my working friends, how many of you in the private sector would love to give up those 401ks that you lost half of in return for a defined benefit pension where you know after 30 years you're going to collect X amount of dollars until the day you die? Because these plans aren't that much more expensive than the defined contribution that puts all of the responsibility on you. They're not. But I'm curious, how many want to keep their 401k in lieu of the defined benefits plan? I'm curious. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that sell our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party pledged to America says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up. And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012. The Rick Smith Show.
Wouldn't that be a joy, seeing Syrah and Sanitarium there? I think Obama would take that in a heartbeat. And it would be one of those really, really funny scenarios. Speaking of Christine O'Donnell, her campaign has issued an apology to a Delaware radio station. She reportedly threatened to sue if the station didn't turn over a video of an interview with her. Evidently, she did this interview with WDEL's Rick Jensen, and it was supposed to be broadcast live over the air and streamed on the video there. And she, I guess, wants it. Not happy with the way it turned out. And decided, hey, you know, I'm going to sue you over it. Well, she turned around and said, well, maybe I was a little crazy, maybe having a hair day, or maybe the mice with the fully functional brains were giving me bad advice. What we need to get here, we need one of those cuckoo sounds, Brett. We need a cuckoo sound. So tomorrow, work on that. We need cuckoo sounds. Speaking of cuckoo, guy that used to go to my church, his name is David Allen, Allen David Berlin. I'm sure most people know him. He's the guy who, weirdly enough, I don't know where he got it. I happened to see a CSI episode that they did with plushies and furries, where these people dress up in panda costumes. And then they, you know, just kind of roll around. And I'm not even really sure what the whole sexual angle is, because you're in one of these big, heavy, hot, like school mascot uniforms. Evidently, he's one of these folks. He was found guilty, or he pled guilty to three counts of felony counts of illegal online contact with a minor. And you know, I said, look, you know, here's a guy who likes to dress up in a, you know, a weird costume and do some weird things. Nothing wrong with that. Well, until he started wanting to do it with a 15-year-old boy. Did I mention he was a Republican legislative aide? Yeah, that was the factor. Which is kind of weird. You know, I go back and I think of all the stories of the Republicans that I've known or that you've heard about over the years who, you know, they were, you know, these big conservatives and, you know, fire, brimstone, law and order. And you turn around, they've got these really perverse, really bizarre personal lives. And I think part of that is this kind of repression, if you will. You know, I was reading the other day that, remember Ted Kaczynski, the guy who, the Unabomber? Turns out that before he was Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, he wanted to have a sex change and become Tedra, the Unabomber, I guess, or the Unibrow, however you wanted to put it. But at the last minute decided to back out of it when he was going through the psychological exams. Kind of makes you wonder. Because I've always been a firm believer that people are who they are. And you gotta be who you are. I've known some friends who they're gay. And they've always known it. It just took the rest of us to figure it out, or them to tell us. And you know what? Don't care. Have never cared. What two consenting adults do in the confines of their four walls is of no consequence to me. But don't be hypocritical. Don't tell me you're something you're not. And then it turns out you're a plushie or a furry or whatever he was doing. Or this guy. It turns out he's an Arkansas district school board member. Because if you remember, last week, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, or GLAAD, they wanted people to wear purple attire and go purple, yeah, because they wanted to call attention to the six teenagers who had committed suicide because of, you know, they're saying homophobic bullying. And in response, you had a bunch of people who came out and said, you know what, we stand with you. There was this It Gets Better campaign where 40 Broadway actors, Google, Hillary Clinton, the president, all came out and did videos on YouTube saying, you know, hey, it's going to get better. Don't do anything rash. Yesterday, Secretary Duncan, Secretary of Education, Artie Duncan set out new guidelines to all the schools, 15,000 of them, 5,000 colleges and universities, saying, you know, bullying's not acceptable. No more bullying. And it's a violation of federal civil rights law. Well, this guy down in Arkansas, the Arkansas District School Board member, his name's Clint McCants. He wrote the following message on his Facebook page. Quote, seriously, they want me to wear purple because five queers killed themselves. The only way I'm wearing it is for them is if they all commit suicide. I can't believe the people in this world have gotten this stupid. We are honoring the fact that they sinned and killed themselves because their sin. Yes, he actually used themselves. And the number of typos and misspellings kind of make you wonder what this guy's doing on the school board. I mean, are these the kind of people we want sitting on school boards? scary, scary stuff. And if you want to talk about really scary stuff, a report came out, 104 Republicans in Congress want to privatize Social Security. If you remember last night, we talked about the 130 that wanted to repeal the 14th Amendment. Now you've got 104 who say, you know what, we should privatize Social Security. So we can talk about the screw job that the Republicans are planning. Because if they gain power, it's coming. 47 of the House Republicans and 49% of the Senate Republicans are on record supporting the privatization of Social Security. My girlfriend, Michelle Bachmann, she wants to go even further and just wean everybody off of it. So sorry, Granny, you're going to have to get off the government teat. Or as former Wyoming Senator Alan Simpson said, there are 310 million people on the government teat, and they're all lazy and stupid. Nah. GOP candidates in favor of privatizing or eliminating Social Security, Aquabuda, Rand Paul, Ken Buck, Dan Coats, Sharon Engel, Dan Bernsky, Ben Quayle, Star Parker, and Jesse Kelly, and let's not forget Pat Toomey, of the 104 Republicans in Congress who support privatizing Social Security. Three of them are from our area. Jim Gerlach in the 6th, Bill Schuster in the 9th, and Joe the Pitts in the 16th. So you can't seem to get away from crazy. And this Social Security thing is frightening to me. Because my grandmother is on Social Security. She depends on it. She has a small pension that comes in. She gets a pension from where she worked for 20-some years as a cashier. She gets some pension from where my grandfather worked as a Teamster. And she gets some Social Security. So, and she has some savings. So she's pretty solid. But if you take one of those legs of the stool away, you got trouble. And that's what really bothers me about Pat Toomey. You know, I look at the fact that, you know, he's run on this platform that, you know, my father was a union man. He collects Social Security, so I'm not going to do anything to hurt him. But you, I'm coming for you, buddy. I mean, really, think about that for a minute. It's interesting. It's an interesting way of viewing the world that I got mine. So to Hades with you. And I guess that's kind of the whole way the whole country's gone. I guess it's the way we've been raised. I guess it's our way of thinking that, you know, I made it through the door. Now I'm going to slam it behind me so nobody gets in with me. You know, I've made it into the middle class, or I've made mine. The heck with you. So I got to, you know, I'm hammering it into my kids' minds that the future is about community, because I do believe they are going to be the greatest generation. They're going to have to save this country. They're going to have to clean up the mess that's been left. They're going to have to repair the damage done if we make the wrong decisions this November 2nd. And as I was talking with you, Representative DePasquale, look, from sitting in this chair, I want nothing more than Christine O'Donnell in the Senate. I want nothing more than Aquabuda in the Senate. I want nothing more than Miller and Racy and Engel. I want them all in there. Bring me your crazy. Bring me your lunatic. Bring me your circus characters. Bring me the guy with the Nazi pajamas. Because I think it'll be really entertaining. Now, from a government standpoint, we're going to have 2 years of complete and total gridlock. Nothing is going to get done. Understand that. Absolutely nothing gets done. And that's what the Republicans want. They want stall. They want delay. They want gridlock. Because they think there's part of me that hopes they take the majority in both the Senate and the House. Because then they're going to have to come up with stuff that the American people are going to have to decide on. We're going to have to look at their plans, look at their visions again. More tax cuts for the wealthy? Nah, it didn't work before. Why do you think it's going to work this time? And the American people are going to have to wake up and pay attention. Because now they're going to have to lead. They just can't sit on the sidelines with their hands and legs crossed saying, no, They just can't be the petulant two-year-old who kicks and screams when he doesn't get his way. They can't do that anymore. They're the majority. They have to lead. It's always easy to take pot shots at the leader. It's always easy. And when they take control, we're going to see what they're made of. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to wrap this up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Dryer on the fritz, and you don't have a bucks for a new one,
call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You'd say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Hello, I'm David Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are. Not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
If it's class warfare, my class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
Well, that's what you got to be.
They hurt you at home and they hurt
you. Oh, you know, just so much going on. So much that you have to know. So much that you have to stand up for and fight back, constantly fighting. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. If you want to email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally and do appreciate the contacts. Remember, you can, if you can't hear us on the radio, you can see us on the web. We do stream all of our programs live. If you missed anything, everything is there for podcast, for video, right there for your use. I do appreciate the feedback. The Illinois-based company Nelco, N-A-L-C-L, Nelco, they manufactured the dispersants used by BP after the Deepwater Horizon spill in the Gulf of Mexico. They have spent more on federal lobbying in the wake of the disaster than they have in the past. Well, of course, you know what they're trying to do? They're trying to cover up for the mistakes. They're a chemical company that in 2008 saw its worldwide sales exceed $4 billion for the first time in company history, and they spent $90,000 lobbying during the third quarter, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. They have, since April, spent $290,000 on lobbying, and since January, they have spent $350,000 on lobbying. Why? Because there's a lot of talk of what exactly did those disbursements do? There's an awful lot of talk on, was it a smart thing to shoot those disbursements 5,000 feet underwater and break them all up down there to where they can't get to the surface? If you were listening to our weekend shows, I thought it was a dumb thing to do. I thought the best thing you could possibly do is let it float to the surface, skim it off, and take it away. But they didn't want you to see that. And this, you know, I'm going to beat up on the Obama administration a little bit here because they believed the company could handle it. And I'm saying what should have happened is they should have taken it over right away. But here's the thing. It's easy for me to say sitting here that I would have taken over the spill and I would have taken responsibility for it and I would have made sure it was done right. You know, that's the easy thing to say. Because we know the right would have gone ballistic. Well, you know, what do you know about cleaning up spills? Well, evidently, about as much as we know about making holes in the ground that we can't patch. You got a company here who's supposed to be the expert. How'd it happen? Oh, that's right. They were cutting corners. Oh, that's right. They were ignoring safety regulations. Oh, gee, that's right. The regulators were in bed with the companies because we had a swinging door on the department that's supposed to oversee minerals and mineral management. They're actually literally sleeping together. They were literally in bed together. Not figuratively. Literally. And this is the leadership that Obama was left with. And you know what I find amazing? Because when this happened, you know, some of my more conservative friends, see, Obama doesn't know what he's doing. Most of the people who were in that agency were holdovers from the last 8 years. And what amazes me is even to this day, you have people who say, well, all the problems that were on the desk when Obama got there in January of 2009 are now Obama's problems. He did it. They're all his problems. There is no understanding of how one presidency leads into another and how the policies of one lead into another. There's no, especially when you're talking about the deficit. It didn't matter who the president was going to be in 2009. There was going to be a $1.2 trillion deficit no matter who was in office. We know that. But the right, you know, they tell their flock that it's Obama's deficit. No, the reality is it was coming no matter who it was. If John McCain were president, it would have been $1.2 trillion. Didn't matter. If George Bush were president again, it would have been $1.2 trillion because it was Bush's deficit. It was the mandates. It was the spending. It were the tax cuts that he enacted during his 8 years. And I wish at some point we could have that conversation about, you know, how these things come together. You know, I was talking to a guy the other day, and he said, you know, when, you know, Clinton benefited from some Reagan policies, and that's true. And I said, but Reagan also benefited from Carter's policies. You know, when Volcker came in as the head of the Fed, you know, fighting the inflation, that was something that was reaped during the Reagan years. Now, to be fair, one of the things they did do, the Reagan people did do, is he went after those unions, boy. He put them in their place, fired those union workers, and thus began the stagnation of wages. And, you know, when you look at that, and I drove a truck for years. I worked for trucking companies for 20-some years. So I have a little understanding of the industry. My grandfather was a lifelong truck driver. My uncle is still a truck driver to this day, been doing it for years. That's an interesting industry to look at because you can see when working people had a voice, their lives got better. They were able to share in more of the fruits of their labor. Their quality of life was better. As soon as you had deregulation, as soon as you had these people going after the unions that represented these workers, you saw these folks, you saw their lives get worse. Much worse. You saw wages stagnate and actually decline. And we're seeing it now in the industry more than ever, since the union companies are in real trouble because of bad decisions that they made. Not because their workforce made a living. That had nothing to do with it. Because they made really bad decisions. And now the workforce is paying for it, but the industry is paying for it. Or I should say the industry workers are paying for it. Because wages are starting to come down. Instead of stagnating, they're declining. And we're going to start seeing that. Now that the union wages are being assaulted, because we're seeing it all across the country, these corporations see an opportunity to go after the gains of 40, 50 years. My grandfather's generation, the gains that they fought for. These companies now see the opportunity, and these politicians, who now feel emboldened to attack that way of life, the Pat Toomeys of the world, they're now going back after that because they know it's a good time and wages will start to go down again. Because I have friends who work for different non-union trucking companies and they all tell me the same thing. Our wages are going down. We're doing more work for less money. They're putting us at risk more often. We're being forced to push the hours because after all, you don't have the ability to say no. You don't have the ability to say, well, that's against the law. Because they'll say, oh, yeah, okay, well, you know, don't come back. That's what the real world is. You know, we can say, well, you know, it's against the law to drive more than, you know, 70 hours in a week. I remember one company I worked for. I peddled freight around the city of Cleveland. And they said, you know, when you're done, after 13 hours, they said, when you're done, take that load out to near Pittsburgh. Take it out to near Pittsburgh and come on back. And it would have been something like a 20-hour day. And I said, that's not legal. Well, you want the job, don't you? And I said, well, I guess not. Not so bad that I'm going to put myself in a position where if I get into an accident, it's me who goes to jail. And that's the position that a lot of these folks are put in. Especially truck drivers. Man, I don't know how you can be a non-union truck driver in this country right now. But that seems to be all that's out there. You want to drive a truck for a living, you're at the mercy of someone else. Even the independents, even you guys who own your own rigs. For the most part, you're at the mercy of the brokers who are robbing you blind. And you know it. Why? Because they know you got to feed your kids. They know you got to pay that payment. They know you got to pay your taxes. You got to pay your living expenses. They know it. They got you, man. Anyway, had a great night tonight. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Remember, check out TheRickSmithShow.com. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain. Democracy is coming.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.